and welcome to episode 258 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the Instagram comic Black, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the buckaroo of fashion wherever he goes, it's Tony Esmond.
Kaiser Chiefs, they're good.
Why are you saying that, Tony? Because you honestly thought I had a Kaiser Chiefs t-shirt on.
I could only read the bit of it because we were on camera a minute ago, weren't we? You like to camera
each other. You obviously can't read the beginning of it because it says Kaiju.
Yeah, I only saw the... I thought, oh, it's, he's got his... When he went to see them in concert those 45 times, he bought himself a t-shirt. When you went to The Voice and he was on it.
I mean, I made the pledge that I was going to see them in concert the amount of times that they say Ruby in the song Ruby.
Is that one of their songs?
Yeah. They say Ruby, 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 Ruby.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah. Presumably singing about curry or something. That's a really shit joke. I'll take that back.
And there's going to be plenty of shit jokes this week because it's just the three of us. Yes. We thought we'd have another Three Amigos show. We've got a few questions to answer. We're going to recommend a whole heap of new books as well.
Fucking loads.
Yeah, we do have quite a lot.
Dan sorted them into a spreadsheet for us. Fine.
Yeah. He finally activated those Excel genes that you've been waiting to use.
I thought we'd kind of like other successful podcasts do. They have like a mailbag kind of thing where people can send in letters. And I thought, let's try that because we want to try and be a successful podcast. And I thought every Friday we open up for letters and now we've got loads. So thank you very much.
Yes. We went the route of it. It was the Facebook group, I believe, wasn't it?
I did post it on the main Awesome Comic Podcast Facebook page, and then I reposted that inside the Awesome Chat, which it got most interaction.
Oh, I didn't look on the Twitter one.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't do it on Twitter.
So
the one that we sort of forgot we owned. That one.
Yeah,
the other.
That's
yeah,
the
yeah
one.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
The one that's the standard sort of page. I forget a lot of things. Normally, I remember them just after we finish recording and think, shit. Should have mentioned that. So if there's anything in this week's show, of course, join the Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk. We'll say it again later on, but there is genuinely a great community of people on there. There's some fantastic dinosaurs that have been going on.
Yeah. That's going well. That's about 70 posts now, isn't it?
Yeah. So artist, writer, comic book reader, fan, journalist, whatever you are, join that group. And if you just want to talk about comics with a
sexy Russian lady.
If you want to draw Tony, then yes.
Nobody drew me. I was pleased.
They obviously haven't heard the show yet, so it's probably a lot.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So it's another Three Amigos show. We're going to have one again next week as well. So you have to put up with us before we go back into our, well, I want to say regular scheduled recording. Isn't that what they used to say? Back to our regular scheduled recording.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's nothing regular about this show.
Irregular.
Yeah. Yeah. We're lining up some fantastic guests for the future and lots of topics that we want to talk about. But before then, we've got to get through this week's show. And the way we were talking before we actually started, we may have creative differences and there may not be another podcast next
week. Yeah, I had a difficult moment before we came on, didn't we? Didn't I? I had a really difficult moment.
Yeah.
Harrowing.
Tried to drop the kids off and the dog jumped in my lap. I was in a bit of a hurry because I wanted to get back to talk to you.
For our international listeners or people who just speak English, what do you mean by that, Tony?
Tried to drop the kids off.
Release the brown trouts.
Tried to pinch off a length of dirty spine.
Right, let me just stop everyone there. Although I've made a note of all of these to use in future conversation. But yes, there you go, folks. How many minutes in we are? Four, and immediately it's toilet humour.
So it's gone all right, actually, so far.
Yeah. But despite, I don't want to worry anyone.
I've got a new audio setup.
Yes, Tony's got a new audio setup, so we're not going anywhere anytime soon because he's got a, what do you call it, Tony?
Snowball, is it a snowball?
Yeah, the snowball mic.
Yeah. And now we've all got snowballs. But
just being a snowman and a snowwoman.
My one's white. You got two black ones. You got two black balls.
Yeah.
Snowballs.
Oh no!
And Tony's also got a what is it? I want to say a winch, but no.
I've got a winch. Yeah, got a cherry picker.
Yeah,
And I've got like an arm that's it's been quite a day of building stuff today. I've got it, you know, one of those arms that you pull down.
Ah, bro, yeah, I've got one of them.
Like a Dutch rudder. Yeah.
Whereas I just literally just stack up books in front of my face and just put
them. I said to you, how do you get what have you got them on? He's just got them on a load of books.
I don't like that because it's all kind of like it was in front of the keyboard if I wanted to get at it.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah, this one you can lift it up like a proper radio DJ thing, isn't it?
If I wanted to search for hardcore pornography during the show, often the books would get in the way.
What do you mean during the show?
Just to keep the energy up.
Yeah, sometimes you need it. It's like
that keeps the energy
coffee
up for a good couple of minutes, and then you're going to go be no good to anyone, Dan. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
No, just edge it for an hour and a half.
Edge it. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I only know that from work. Yeah, I do like to occasionally, but then again, you get tired and there's a map of Africa on the couch next to you and you just want to go to sleep.
God.
Anyway,
we've gone for it today, haven't we?
Well, yeah. I tell you what, we decided to go downhill first before then.
This always happens. We used to say this. We need a guest on to bring us back to the mainstream.
Yeah. and guests will be coming up. And
you've been listening to Brazzers, the podcast.
I've just looked on the app.
What, Dan? No, we can't talk about this now. No. Dirty, dirty boy.
What have you looked at? Come on, tell us.
On comichouse.com. Comic Marketplace.
Who are Comic House, Dan?
They're the comic book marketplace where you can read a whole bunch of the best of indie press on their Comic House app.
I'll tell you what, that wasn't bad considering he just pulled that right out of his backside.
Yeah. We've only heard it 250 times.
Yeah, they're also our sponsor. Thank you for sticking with us, Comic House. but as Dan said...
Pete sent us a message saying he's enjoying the adverts, didn't he, this week?
Bro.
Someone has to. Yeah, if you go to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on their database. If you self-publish, you can list your book on there for free. Start selling your book straight away. But yeah, as Dan said, there's an app, which may get a little bit more of a mention later on in the show.
Bro. Yeah.
Yeah, you're all over it this week,
I've
Dan.
Been on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So not only is there a lot of our past guests have books on the app, future guests, no doubt, because that's the beauty of it. It's like the show, you discover new books. And it is like Netflix for comics, and there's stuff being added all the time. What's on there at the moment, Dan?
Well, looking at the latest digital comics on the app, I'm very pleased to see Slaughterhouse Farm 4.
Oh, God, that fucking...
Bride of Pigfucker.
Yeah.
The Final Slaughter. We've got...
I was opposite them at Thought Bubble, those guys, and they kept coming over and going, you never guess what we're doing in the next issue, fuck me. And I'm like, yes!
Yeah. Yeah.
Be interesting to see how they can ramp it up more after the previous ones.
Yeah.
We've got Teddy Boy 5 and Teddy Boy 4 and 3 and 2 and 1.
is that all of them?
You're not exactly Fluff Freeman, are you? But it's going well.
No. It's interesting because it looks like it's a publisher in Hong Kong. And I don't think there's that many titles on Comic House from that corner of the globe. So that's very interesting. I'll have to check that out. And we've got The Spark as well. Recently updated. Brilliant. Yeah.
Nice. She took something out. Yeah.
Space Precinct Zero. The Undesirables.
Not the old Gerry Anderson thing.
I don't think so.
Right. No. That was fucking awful.
That was pretty bad. Yeah. I watched that thinking I really want to enjoy this. But then after that, I didn't.
It looks like it's filmed in a garage.
Yeah, it's really not very good.
So
there's so much on Comic House right now. And I'm going to be talking about a couple of titles later on in the show.
Yes. So if you want to check out those and more, it's only £3 a month subscription, like Netflix for comics, basically. You get access to that and an enormous library of digital indie comics, which is being added to all of the time. Plus, there's a 14-day free trial. And with the code STAYSAFE, you can get another month free as well, which is very valid because at the moment there's a lot of us that can't go outside or shouldn't go outside. Well, the three of us shouldn't go outside anyway, even when it was normal. So, but if you want to read some great comics, then go to comichouse.com. And,
definitely.
Yes, and thank you for putting up with us.
I'll tell you, some fucking woman had a go at me for wearing my mask outside.
Oh, you got shit today, didn't you?
I had to stop giving her the old two-finger salute. But
you had to stop?
Yeah.
Well, like a bowling ball.
I'll just fuck off. bird.
were you doing that before she told you off?
No. No. I was walking through the park, the most heinous of crimes.
Here we go. Here we go.
Close to the meat.
Yeah. No, I kind of had to go to the post office to send a couple of Vanguards out, Book 3 that I'd sold. And then I thought I'd put my mask on before I go there because it's only a 5-minute walk. And some fucking old deer started saying, "Why are you wearing your mask out? You're in the park." I had to, "Oh, shut up. I'm going to the post office."
Yeah.
Then I had to go to the supermarket and some shit. But
did you get off with her or?
Sadly not, no.
Okay. It
wasn't on the cards.
Yeah, I think that's always a good option. When they have a go at you, always try and get off with them.
You'll know next time, Dan.
Yep. I did stop a woman from being brutally attacked.
Oh, wow. Okay. What happened there? You haven't told this one.
This is my self-control from her.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, God. Jesus. Don't go to the park anymore. Avoid the park.
Actually, Dan, I think you shouldn't go outside.
Go in.
Do you think being inside is like driven him mad, Tony?
I think it's driven the whole world mad. I'll be honest with you. Yeah, I think that's part of the problem. I think the fact we've all now lost it.
Mm, yeah. You know, I'm fairly sure that the past 5 years I haven't been recording a podcast. I've just been talking into a tennis ball.
The three of us are in a prison cell somewhere, but we think we're out reading comics and going to conventions.
Yeah,
and we're just making up stories to entertain each other.
Yeah, it's like the Matrix. Yeah.
Life well lived.
Only with matching pajamas. Anyway, back onto comics, and we've got to start off with a bit of sad news, as if the world
isn't sad enough at the moment, let's face it. Yeah. We lost Dennis J. O'Neill, the comic book writer and editor, who will be known to everyone who's read a comic book, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
He's best known for Green Lantern and Green Arrow, Batman. He did The Shadow with Michael Kaluta, The Question with Dennis Cowan, which is outstanding stuff. He was he's been an editor as well. He edited some amazing books. He edited the Daredevil book. He edited G.I. Joe, which I know is a favourite of ours.
He brought
Miller up, you know, through a lot of work, Frank Miller, and a really nice guy, a real creature of his environment, so a real sort of anti-war kind of peace and love kind of guy. You very rarely saw him without like a CND badge on, stuff like that. A gentle guy. I know he had his demons for a few years. I think he was a bit of a drinker, but whenever you see interviews of him, you know, and there's a lot out there because of stuff like the Arrow TV series and stuff like that. You know, there's the odd interview with him, and he worked very closely with Neil Adams, who I'm sure is totally caught up about this. But yeah, an absolute gent as far as I ever saw him, and he'll be sorely missed.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, certainly on those brief moments where I've popped onto social media, you look at any of the comic professionals and stuff that had any interaction with him. Every single one is just, he was one of the greats, really.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there's some, I mean, Hard Traveling Heroes, get a hold of that, which is, I think you put me onto it, actually, Dan. There's it's for sale on Zavvi, isn't it? There's a special Zavvi sale.
I saw Tom Ward talking about it, and I was like, oh, Christ, there's loads of stuff here. And
loads of DC stuff, isn't there?
How long is that sale on for, as we speak?
I don't know.
See if we can stick it in the Facebook group
We'll stick it in the Facebook group. We'll put it in the show notes, obviously.
It's five hardbacks for 15 quid, is that right?
That's crazy, isn't it?
I ordered five, yeah.
And
those
are the perfect time to, you know, pick up some of those. You know when you see those reprints of like classic stories or classic runs, and they put them in a hardback, and when they come out new, I don't know what you, it's almost like a subliminal thing, they come out new and you're like, yeah, well, I mean, that is classic story, but I don't, you know, I'd rather get something new right now. But when you see them in these sales, it's the perfect time.
Yeah, some great stuff. Legion Superheroes, there's all sorts of stuff there, man.
The reason they're getting reprinted so much because they're fucking classic. They're really good comics.
There's some great art.
And the price you can't beat. I mean, I think I sent the message to you and I said, look, I'm fucking thinking about getting this. And then, like, not even a couple of hours, or maybe it's the next day, we got the news about Denny O'Neill. I was like, well, I've got to get it now.
I'd ordered it. Yeah, and it's just like the third version of it I've got. But you get so many for 15 quid. You know, you can't get, what do you get 15 quid these days in comics? You know,
nothing.
Yeah, the other stuff I'd recommend.
You can't really get one digital trade paperback these days for.
You can't, can you? Mm. Yeah. Other stuff I'd recommend for him: The Shadow 1941 with Michael Kaluta and Russ Heath, just amazing, like absolutely brilliant. He did a shitload of Batman stuff. The Batman Sword of Azrael.
Oh yeah,
Batman Bloodstorm. He did Batman Venom, which is a really interesting story. He also, weirdly, I didn't realize this, but I read a couple of his novels recently without even knowing it. And he did, there was a DC Universe series where they sort of focused in on different, I think Alan Grant wrote the Lobo one. He did one called Helltown, which I think off the top of my head is like The Question and Richard Dragon and a couple of characters. And they're really good reads. You know, if you,
okay,
you just want a paperback to read on the train, they're actually pretty good. Yeah, real shame. Real shame. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if you've read any of his stuff, go back and give it a reread. And if you haven't, then now's the perfect time.
We're losing these guys quickly, and it's a shame because this is the history of comics, guys, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, from that bit of sad news to the majority of this show. Well, I say majority, you never know. We've got some fantastic recommendations to talk about this week. And we did a bit of a Q&A. Dan Butcher, Dan the man who can butcher, put a shout out for some questions. I think it's been a fair few months since we've had a Q&A. Not that any of us are experts or professionals or anything like that. So whatever you're about to hear over the next hour or so is either going to be from our own experiences of making comics, our own opinions or whatever. There is no hard and fast, as you know by this show, there's no hard and fast rule to make comics. As long as you're making comics, that's what matters. But thank you to everyone who sent a load of questions in. Dan's got the task of, you're the question master, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah. We're not going to do them all, are we, D? We're going to throw out a few of them. Yeah.
I'll start off with one from David Livens, who's relatively new to the group.
Oh, okay.
And he said, how often do you find yourself swayed stylistically by whatever you're currently reading? Whether art or writing, do you ever find yourself deviating from your personal style towards emulating whatever your current favourite book is?
With this question, I'm like a magpie creatively. Okay. Like sometimes I get really distracted by the new cool shiny thing that I think is absolutely amazing. I wouldn't necessarily say stylistically, certainly when it comes to my art, because my art, I'm coming to terms with the fact that my art style is its own beast that will not be, it's like concrete, it will not be shaped, it will evolve into its own next version of the thing, but I'm not, you know, even if I wanted to draw like a Jim Lee, I can't do that. So, but certainly when it comes
there's some latter you can do. I mean, even Jim Lee changed his style a bit, didn't he? He did that whole Frank Miller thing, didn't he? He had for a while.
Yeah, Joe Madureira when he started in comics was drawing. He was a Jim Lee clone before he, you know, created the style that is now he's famous for. So
yeah, I mean, Sienkiewicz started as a sort of Neil Adamsy kind of guy, didn't he? Yeah. As well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think sometimes when creatively, when I'm thinking of ideas, I'm like, oh, this is a great idea, and I'll jot it down, and then, you know, in the infamous notebooks that are full of stuff that you need to write down, walk away, come back, see if it's any good. And sometimes when I come back, I just think, hang on, that's pretty much a carbon copy of that. That thing I watched, or that thing I read, or that, you know, just anything like that. That happens to me all the time. I have an elephant graveyard of discarded comic book concepts and ideas that, if I'm going to be honest with myself, I have ripped off of other things. I can say that because none of them have made it to print. They've never gained a sentience or a life. But I am sometimes completely influenced by the things.
Well, in the words of Gareth Hopkins, who I'm sure is repeating the words of someone else, there are no new ideas.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Totally. What about you? What about you, gents?
I don't know. I think I'm just kind of stuck in my way around writing what I want to write. I don't. I do read stuff that helps me inspire me to continue in that. So I read quite especially fiction. I read a lot of very sort of dark stuff.
Hmm.
I've just finished like a whole year of reading Hanif Qureshi and Martin Amis pretty much nonstop.
Writing is completely a voice. I know every stage of comics is a voice, but writing very much so. There is, you can tell if someone's trying to write like Alan Moore, and they really can't. But certainly with a lot of the stuff, you know, we read recently, myself and Dan can tell when someone's trying to write like a Tony Esmond. Because your work has a voice, Tony. It's completely got it's individual, and And that's what comics have to be.
Do you know, I'm only just realising that. If I'm honest with you, I'm only just realising that I have this sort of fixed voice in a way. I mean, not for everything. The kids' stuff is a whole different ballgame. But
still, dude, I still think when I get those scripts of like monster spotters and things like that, you know, I can see.
Right. You okay. In interesting. It. Yeah. Ken Reynolds lettered Tony Osmond out in a couple of weeks, and he said it's another Tony cut. He says he was very, you know, he's nice about it, but he said it's another Tony cut. Okay. And I looked back on some stuff. I was chatting to John Tucker about it the other day. I looked back on some stuff I did in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. And it's got that same vitriol about it. Yeah. You know, so,
I mean, I think the Tony Osmond style is definitely something which is, I think we can call it the NFG style, which is no fucks given, because you really you really don't.
As opposed to the normally the other reference to it, which is NFG, no fucking good, is the other.
But the same can be said of yours, Vince, with the MI6.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
That's this absolutely sung out that you wrote this throughout.
See, that's surprising to me.
Same with Devil Kickers. It was Devil Kickers, wasn't it?
Devil Kickers.
When I was reading that, it was essentially like you were telling me a story. You. Like you shone out through the book, your personality.
I think specifically with MI666 is because Andy's style is not like yours, but it's not totally dissimilar.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot of his figure drawing has a little bit of the Vince in it, or you've got a little bit of him and you. You know, there's a little bit of that there somewhere that it totally felt like a Vincenzo Hunt book to me, yeah.
Andy's art is excellent throughout, and his drawing is very good.
Yes.
Thank you. Look, I mean, I'm going to shout out the book again in the shout-out so we don't... I'll bring up the book again in a minute. But, all right, and Dan, what about you?
Over the years, I think I've hardened my heart to life. Not trying to ape other people and what they do, but certainly I've had, like, influences from stuff I've read and kind of stuff. Maybe it's more of a kind of a higher thing of like changed the way I've thought about stuff, and that's bled into the work. But I can't really recall thinking, looking and saying, "So I'm going to do that in my work," or a train of thought.
I think you got to be honest, and I think I'm really sick of people, because you can tell the falseness if people are just forcing something. You know, you can tell someone who says something like, oh, I'm going to do a story, you know, a comic about a zoo now, about happy people in a zoo. And you think, yeah, because you've just seen there's a zoo program on television or something like that. You know, happy zoo. Happy zoo.
I was playing a game called God of War 4. And there's a character, it's like set in kind of like mythology, and a character gets a head chopped off, and essentially for the game, the main character's wearing it around, and he's kind of like a very knowledgeable kind of character, and he's telling you all that's going on about the folklore myth. And I thought that'd be great if like one of the characters in Vanguard, I know a character that could happen to, and they were like, well, I'd just be totally ripping off for fucking someone else's good idea. So,
and also a very popular book, you know, so people would call you on it straight away, wouldn't they?
Yeah. So, I didn't do that. But I can understand the kind of the temptation would be the word to sort of us.
I hate people who do that. They see what they think this. Oh, I think that'll be popular, or this seems popular. I'll write that. Or, you know, wouldn't it be did it funny if we did this? Or, you know, it's like, just speak from your heart, man.
Right, I want the story you want to tell. Like, if you've got a story in you, I want that story. I don't want you thinking I'm going to write this story because I think people will like it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, if you're doing it commercially and someone says you got to write a Judge Dredd story, you write a fucking Judge Dredd story.
Fine. Yeah, if you're employed.
But if you're doing like small press and you think, well, I'm going to fucking write a story about a fish and chip shop because I grew up in a fish and chip shop, that's the story I want to read for you.
But to me, the people.
Fish
and chip shop. The people who succeed in this are people who add their voice to established characters. And an Animal Man, Swamp Thing, you know. Well, Superman, you know, the X-Men, you know, the successful runs on that. Look at what Denny O'Neill just did. We just talked about him. Yeah. Neil Adams. Yeah. Look at that. Green Arrow and Green Lantern. They put their mark on it. You know, they gave it some of themselves. And they do have especially Denny has a style of writing. You know, he's got that style.
I think also, though, like time comes into it, because thankfully, you know, all these creators manage to do that now, because can modern like big two comics have as much of a voice. You do get the rare arc, or you know, one or two that
it's less and less, isn't it?
Yeah, it's less and less, and it's more like, you know, the indie books. And
I read a review of a Harley Quinn comic today, and I just couldn't fucking believe what I was reading. It was just unbelievable. Oh, she gets into a fight in a museum with Clayface, and at the end of it, she's sort of like preaching how good museums are and how they're an underused resource.
I'm going to save it for the recommends, but there's some interesting facts and figures. I'm going to quote you from my recommend.
Okay.
Around this, yeah. Wait in here. Yeah, you'll be surprised to hear them. I think. Yeah.
To put a full stop on this question, I think it's impossible not to be affected by your influences. It's called an influence.
Go with them, man.
It's called an influence for a reason. But
don't rip off. But
yeah. As a creator, you should also have the restraint and like be sensible enough to know when to stop. And you know, if you're just trying to do something, you know, someone else has already done. Why would you do like that when the world already has that?
Your version of Spider-Man or Batman, because it's been fucking done a million times.
But if you want to do that kind of story and you have an original take on it, if you look at it down on paper, a book like, let's face it, Invincible shouldn't have worked on paper. You think this is just another retelling of the superhero stories that we're getting from Marvel and DC, but
yeah,
there was something about that which meant it had a run over 100 issues, you know, and is one of Dan's favorite books. So write whatever, you know, create whatever you're going to create, but do your book however you want to do it. And if people don't like it, fuck them.
Yeah, we don't care anymore. Listen, you're never going to earn a living out of comics these days. It ain't going to happen. Yeah. Whoever you are, just write what you want and just be honest about it. Yeah.
Yep. You know, if it's not for us, if it's not for this person, if it's not for that person, it doesn't matter. It's for someone. Every book is for someone. You know. So, yeah. Cool. Blimey. Hang on. I'll just get off this soapbox. What's the next question?
Let's have another one. Let's have a lighter one.
This one's a lighter one. Yeah. It might be a bit challenging. From Philip McFarlane. In 1979's Moonraker, as James Bond takes to the streets of Venice seamlessly from water via a modified sky gondola, nearby a presumably local pigeon appears to take a double take at the action unfolding in front of him. What comic book have you wanted to read again straight away or have a double take? I would put Atomic Hercules in that category.
Oh, thank you, Phil. And thing is, like,
hashtag
I know
boots licked.
I know, Phil. There's no way he was alive for Moonraker.
Enough bank holidays in between then and now.
I'd like to say I was once in a Moscow disco and I got off with a girl who looks like the girl at the end of Moonraker that Jaws disappears off with. To be fair, was the reason I chatted her up. There you go. There's a little Moonraker story.
You say Moonraker? No? Oh, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I'm sure I can't think of one after. I mean, obviously, there's the books like Atomic Hercules where. Actually, it's got to be those sort of, it's those real
shock
punk books, if I can use that term, which of course, like Atomic Hercules is like that, you know, the real sort of like, and I mentioned it last week and I mentioned to the guys that I was excited that issue 2 is out, Horserer. Those books that you read and you think, the fuck was that?
I think the one I was thinking of was Silver Surfer Black. And I remember reading that and thinking, that is fucking amazing. There's no way I worked out everything that's going on in
that.
So I went
crazy,
back and read it.
Trad Moore like takes experimental to a whole different.
That's like worthy of heavy metal back in the day. You know, it's that sort of thing.
It looks like a seventies really sort does. Of psychedelic album artwork, isn't it?
That it could be a Hawkwind comic, couldn't it? Yeah. But it's highly recommended. There's a sort of oversized Treasury size edition version of it, which almost Treasury size edition, which I got. It's just beautiful. Yeah, absolutely beautiful. And I must have looked at it, stroke read it, because it's a difficult book to read as opposed to look at, you know. Yeah. There's so much sort of visually going on that I've been backing it in and out of that loads of times. Yeah.
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 What about you, Dan?
I'm struggling with that one, you know. Really am. There's definitely been moments, but it's just hard to recall one where I've been reading something and think, fucking hell. There's certainly some comics I've gone straight through again. Just like I've read it and left it, and then like, oh, I'll read that again this afternoon, and gone through it again. I'll tell you which one I read multiple times while I was on holiday a couple of years ago was Desert Star.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I read that through, and then I was like, before the second one turned up, I read it again, and then when the second one came through, yeah, I was just fucking on that in a shot.
There's almost a sort of, I think it's almost getting your brain to realise there is reality sometimes, because it, like, that seems really weird, and I haven't been smoking anything.
That's good, like this. Bring it on.
But you know when you read something that's really fucking good that hits you right in the vein, like right in the artery, and you finish it and you just think, did that actually exist? Because that was fucking amazing. And you kind of need to go back and just sort of, just to prove to yourself, oh yeah, this comic actually exists. And it's just
fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's the ones that play on your mind, isn't it? When you walk away and they play it overnight, even sometimes, I get that, yeah.
It's not all the time when you get that when you read it and you kind of absolutely sucked in and just you lose yourself in the material, like with films, books, comics.
Yeah.
But it's relatively rare for a comic to like absolutely just take me well in, and I'm just I can't.
It's got to have the whole package as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Certainly we've all had those moments where we've looked at books, we've pored over these comics because they've got they've got amazing splash pages or art or whatever. But when we've read them, oh, it doesn't really hold up.
No. I'll tell you another one for me, Jim Woodring's Poochie Town. First, I'd seen bits and pieces of Jim Woodring. I know we had Andy Barron, isn't it, who does Army. We talked to him about it, didn't we? Who's got a new book coming soon, very excited. That it was so strange but so weirdly beautiful that I just couldn't believe it. So I went back and pored over the pages, and as is my wont, went on eBay to see if I could buy a page, it's that sort of thing. There's a bit of that going on sometimes.
How is the eBay art market at the moment?
Here and there you can find some bargains. I think you won't get a page much south of 600 quid for Woodring, which is I haven't ventured in that area.
Do you have a specific idea of what you're looking for when you go to search?
Yeah, so I have a couple areas. I go Bronze Age. There's some reasonable Sal Buscema pages on there, not specifically Bronze Age, but some stuff by him. And then I started looking for old UK and old British comic art. I'm sort of hovering over some Bionic Man pages from I Think Looking.
Nice.
And stuff like that. And they're not too bad.
Yeah, I've been told like the UK stuff is generally undervalued, where the US stuff is generally a little overvalued.
Yeah, and you have to pick your way through art on eBay. There's so many scammers on there.
That's the trouble with eBay.
Production art for, and you're like, oh, right. Or recreation of and stuff like that. It's not enough, and there's not enough on there. And I think sometimes I go to agents as well and look at Cadence Comic Book Art and all these sort of people. And I have bought pages off them, Comic Book Splash Art, I think it's called. And I bought pages off them, but the problem we've got now is I don't know if I'm like targeted by HM Customs, but I have to pay an extra like 30 quid whatever I seem to get through. I bought some kayfabe t-shirts the other day and ended up having to pay fucking a load more money,
Jesus.
If
it's art, isn't that exempt? Maybe not.
I don't think so. No, it hasn't been for me so far. No.
I can remember getting fucked on importing Masamune Shiro, like the kind of manga artist. I imported a book. He does a series of art books, and I've got Intron Depot 1. And then said, oh, there's outstanding VAT to pay on this. And went down, it was something like 20 quid. And
I that's what I get.
Fucking hell, man.
That's what I've had loads of times.
So... get stung twice.
Yeah, talking about double taking on a book, I read some a Mad Special earlier. I should sort of double took on, but we probably won't talk about that one.
I double took the cover when you held out to the camera.
Yep.
Fucking hell.
Bloody hell. Yeah. Okay. Good.
Yes. Okay. This is going well.
Through this, man.
So scan through another question. Right. Here's one more practical side of comic creation from Simon Russell. Okay. How important are your tools to you when you make a comic? I've been dealing with someone who insists on having pencils scanned and printed as blue lines on Bristol board and wants to know what nib brush the pros use, etc., etc. Seems weird to me because my approach has always been wherever I can lay my hands at the time, and that'll do the job. It says, but then again, I did fantasize about Nicki Minaj Schultz's nibs on display at the Somerset House the other year. So maybe I'll have some belief in tall magic.
I mean, I'm with Simon on this one.
He's trolling me by saying the words tall magic, isn't he? He's just he's trying to get me to say something there. Yeah. But yeah, sorry, yeah.
I'm totally with Simon on this one because, and this may just be me personally, if someone's sort of saying, oh, what sort of brush or ink or tip or, you know, all of this should I use? Would suggest that they think there's a specific way to make comics, and there isn't. It's whatever, you know. If it's easier for you to do all digital, then do it all digital. You know, I grew up like not having loads of art equipment. I usually just draw on whatever paper that I could find, which drove my parents mad when I would do the blank pages in the front of books.
Yeah.
I used to draw stick figures of like Captain America and all that when I was a kid. But, you know, why my parents didn't just throw me into a river, I don't know.
Buy you some paper.
Yeah, it's true.
Those times were hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just think. I mean, if there is, you know, certainly there are places, there are resources, certainly online resources, if you want to know something. Like a specific pen or ink pen, and this is stuff that I don't know because if I wanted to know it, I would. I Google ask. It. Yeah, I would ask someone who's got a similar sort of style. That if I see, we've seen loads of artists who are using ink brushes and stuff, like Russell Mark Olson and like just loads of artists that are doing like original sort of artwork, and you're just thinking, fucking hell, what's the techniques that they're doing? But if you ask them. They're constantly experimenting and trying different things anyway, you know, because they're also looking at other people's work and going, oh, I like that pen. I like the way that, that, you know, the brush moves on the paper. So just my advice is just find whatever works for you or Google it. There you go.
Same with the script writing as well, isn't it, Tony? Like for me, I do it all now on Google Docs online.
Right. Yeah.
I don't need any special program for kind of, for putting it together. I mean, there's so many tools at our disposal now as creators to put stuff together.
I do it in notes on the iPad because I've got a keyboard with it, or if I'm actually at a computer, I just do it in Word. I'm a bit careful to, I sort of centralize the text, so I do it in the sort of the central column thing, and all the speeches in highlighted, and that's kind of it really.
One thing I like, the whole idea of like, oh, my favorite artist who does these amazing comics uses this pen. I think you might have to be a little bit careful of that. I imagine some artists might get a bit snippety if you sort of, how do you do your comics? What pen and the pencil do you use? When really you kind of, it's because they're fucking good at it and they've spent hours and hours practicing, not the tool they're using.
Yeah. You're only good because you use that Japanese ink.
Exactly.
Like
Yeah. So one thing I did, I was using like just off the shelf highlighter pens, fineliners, to do my inking, and when I scanned them in, no matter how much I pratted around with them in Photoshop, the line would always come out fucked up and broken. And I thought, well, the paper I'm using is fine. So I asked a couple of people, what pens are you using? And got the kind of consensus, and I got those, they're kind of like beige looking pens with purple writing on them. They're sort of like the standard everyone use. And after I did that, the scanning them in, I got a lot better line quality. And for me, if you're kind of using it for that reason, that's fine. But if you just, you don't need to have like the blue line paper and board and all that stuff. As long as you can kind of create what you want to create, and you're getting out of it what you want to get out of it.
Well, when I started doing that, like playing about with doing drawing, I was speaking to Bob Fingerman, and he recommended these Kuretake brush pens.
Okay,
and I just use them in a pencil. I do quite like them. They seem quite fun. Yeah.
Is that a Japanese brush pen? Because I know, they're some of the best ones. I know a few.
They're not super expensive or anything, and they sell them on Amazon and all that, you know.
I just wouldn't get too precious about it. If you can make the comics you want to make using a fucking HB pencil and a Sharpie pen, go for it.
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Just make sure it's a comic, and it's good.
Yeah.
Dave Kennedy asks, have any of you ever laid an egg? I'm doing one right now, and it stinks.
Well, I tried to, didn't I?
Yeah, tried to.
Yeah. But unfortunately, he's packed up like the M25. So
Sharknado jumped on my lap while I was trying to do it, and I'm worried about my junk.
Yeah.
And I stopped.
Well, I mean, that's impressive muscle control, because I thought you would have just released like a bay doors of a bomber.
I've been a vegetarian since I was 16, so it's not slowing coming out. I'll be honest with you.
The train is out of the loft.
Oh my god! Oh my.
Right, so two questions from Tom.
Give us a minute, Dan.
I've got an image of you in the loft, Shane. Watch out below.
Right. Okay.
So, two questions, Tom Curry. First one: do you think there's some gimmicks in comics that don't work? So, using sound effects or animation throughout a comic.
Yeah, I've got a gimmick that doesn't work in comics.
What's that? Reboots. Okay.
short term money, long term jumping off point.
Yeah.
Stop fucking rebooting everything. That's a gimmick that don't work.
Yeah. It does, like, you're burning up goodwill for short term cash.
Yeah.
Because at some point everyone's going, oh, fuck this. I ain't fucking. Oh,
they're changing it all again. I've just worked out who everyone is. I'm invested in the story and, oh, they're rebooting it again. And
you're rebooting Nightwing again.
Yeah. The first couple of issues might get a little lift, and after that, you're fucked again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And usually it's not like a radical change. It's like a slight little tweak. And
Often it's a creative team, and the creative team have promised a number one issue or something. You know, it's like that. Yeah. Sometimes it's that, isn't it?
Call it like the Outrageous Batman or something. Just give them their own title. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the Bumptious Batman.
Yeah.
I love it when they go, yes, it's a brand new ongoing team for six issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe four, if it doesn't sell that well.
Yeah. Yeah, Uncanny X-Men is rebooting. Oh, brilliant. Yeah good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's been so many gimmicks in comics, isn't there? Certainly with... All right, let's tackle Tom's examples first, like sound effects and animation in comics. We've talked about certain bits, and I know animation can be used really well. I think certainly in the web comic field, and certainly Tom's got these simple animations on Skelly Bob.
Yeah.
Give him send him a fiver. That work really well. Yeah,
I think for a three panel comic where it's a humor strip, having those with slight animation is not a problem.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it? Yeah.
Sound effects can be problematic because it's a timing issue.
Yeah.
So, how does a sound effect work when you're reading through it? It comes more of a motion comic as opposed to a.
Yeah, I rarely read a comic that with headphones on or anything like that.
Yeah.
And most of my comic reading is done in public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember. Oh God, what were the comics that?
Another example. Made Fire.
Yeah, is that
Made Fire is the one with Dave Gibbons. What's the one with Liam Moore? Those ones. Are they the ones?
Electric.
I was thinking of Mark Waid's. It was comic ones where you would press space and like certain panels would like. I mean, it wouldn't be animated. It wouldn't like be a cartoon, but just say it would be a black panel and then all of a sudden eyes would appear from it.
Yeah,
you know, that sort of thing. I think things like that can work okay in the context of what they are.
I don't think people want them.
I think on the whole, it's a lot of work for.
Yeah. I think you can only look at the three versions we've talked about there. The Mark Waid one, which I can't remember. Is it? I can't remember that. It's not Monkey Brain, is it? Is that it? No. The Made Fire and whatever happened to Electric Comics? Whatever happened to that?
Yeah.
It's a huge launch. It had some great funding. The all of them looked amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it just disappeared again. I don't really know what happened. Comics, if anyone knows what happened to Electric Comics, please let us know.
Yeah. Comics, that's what happened.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I think, and certainly another gimmick thing, which has never been for me, and I like you say, Tanny, I don't know who the audience is for this. And please let us know in the comments or emails or whatever. Motion comics.
That's another one. Isn't it? It's a curiosity now, isn't it? I've got the old Watchmen motion comic on DVD, and I've never watched it.
They're sort of DVD extras and stuff like that, which is fair play. You know, if you're tasked with creating these things, I mean, normally I find that with the motion comics and stuff like that, it's normally bigger media companies who are doing these extras for their DVD, so therefore they're going to pay someone to do it. And so fair play if you're going to do it, and if you can make a great one, brilliant. And if there's any great ones out there, please let us know.
Yeah, because we're kind of struggling.
There's a Black Panther one, isn't there? It's a JRJR one, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's a Spider Woman one, wasn't there? Do you remember the Alex Maleev, Brian Bendis? They did one of that, didn't they?
Okay.
Yeah. And I know it does fascinate me when I think it looks cool sometimes when people take these static bits of sort of artwork and they just move it slightly so it has animation. I see it a lot in sort of Kickstarter videos and things like that. It can work really
often
well.
Often used as like a promotional tool, you're selling it as opposed to
It's something. I'm not a big animation fan, as you know, but there's something that I want a comic, because I'm old-fashioned and boring, but I want comics to be comics. I want animation to be animation.
Yeah,
the middle ground doesn't work for me. Yeah,
the motion comics basically have the drawbacks of both and the positives of neither.
True.
Like you kind of, they're usually very slow plodding. You're trying to tell a story from one format and the other without embracing, like, if you're going to tell the comic as an animation, tell it as an animation, but having it really static with like certain characters slightly moving, I don't get it for me. I mean, but then again, if you're making a motion comic and it's not based on anything else, I still think there's stuff there that can be kind of done with and worked with it.
Yeah.
We looking on Kickstarter recently, remember I talked about it months ago, that Neon Wasteland?
Yeah.
The chap's doing issue two of that. And the whole idea of like the VR, like the AR thing, when you're looking at the comic through your smartphone and it animates.
Yeah.
That's a really neat effect. But for me, it's superfluous for...
It's got a mental shelf life, hasn't it? It's got one of those, this is nice, and then how many times...
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you're
done.
It's
got to have a storytelling element, but it's got to be something in it that, rather than just look at a panel and then like the character's eyes go in and out. Yeah.
It's like the Marvel AR stuff. Did you ever try any of that, where you held your iPhone over it and it'll be, you know, Greg Rucker will appear and explain to you what's happening in this story or something, and I just want it to be a comic. Stop spending your money on that nonsense and just pay the creators, you know.
We did have one where it was like, it was kind of animated like on a 3D plane, so when you turned it, the elements moved.
I remember that
was quite nice. That was a nice curiosity. I can imagine you'd be able to do something with that. I'd be a lot more open to stuff like that than the straight motion graphic stuff.
I mean, my question is, with all of those kind of sort of especially electronic or digital gimmicks, is they have the life of when you've read them and you think they're cool, and they have the life when you then show it to someone else to show it's cool. What is their life after that? Do you ever go back to it again?
And you can't tell me that in 10 years time you'll still be able to download the Marvel AR app. Good comics, man. That's what we want.
We're like Tom's when you got, and it's essentially like all web comics, those kind of three panel things that are the music, they kind of like got a consumability and then they're kind of done. They're a bit disposable, but you can kind of trawl through someone's website where they've done loads of these and get lots of laugh out of them. I can manage in animated elements within them would work really well because they use them once and then they're gone. Mm. And it's just for a kind of short-term hit.
These just strike me as the idea of marketing people and not the idea of people who understand how comics work.
Yeah, just, I can understand. Yeah,
you know, comics don't work with suddenly there's a noise of a helicopter over your head.
I don't want sounds.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I don't know, it kind of babyfies it a bit.
Yeah.
Don't like it. It's like if I wanted, you look at a fucking painting and it's raining, they go, oh, now I've got to pipe in some rain sound effects.
Yeah.
So I don't need that.
Yeah, we're really going to do that at the, you know,
National Gallery.
Yeah.
Interesting, though. I think there's kind of some scope there, but I don't think the way it's been done is really ringing my bell at the moment. Yeah. I mean, I do those animated banners for Vanguard to get people to fucking click the link, which, to those two or three people that do that, thank you.
But that's different. That's an advert.
Yeah, it's an advert, essentially. But, so the next question from Tom. Last episode, you were talking about collaboration in terms of writing. When do you think projects benefit from collaborating and when they should be kept solo? By the way, I'm really just talking about art, writing, lettering, colouring, etc. You should always get someone to check your script from an editing point of view.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm hard-pressed to think of a proper answer for that from my own experience, because obviously I have to collaborate with people. I don't know. I enjoy collaborations, and I also enjoy the work of, you know, people like Dave Sim, who kind of mostly do it on their own. I don't know. I think it both works. I'll be honest with you. I think it both works.
Yeah. There's times when like I've got a story and I want to tell it my way, and I don't want anyone else to have a because then it's not my story anymore. Then if I was collaborating on someone, I want it to be the strength of both of us inputting, and it'd be a collaborative effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it kind of works both ways for me.
Yeah. There's a magic that works in the best collaborations, you know, and sometimes it don't quite work. Yeah.
I think when you get like a creator and an artist that kind of get each other and they work really well, it's great. You know, like Nocturnal in,
Commissions.
Yeah. That just the fusion of the writer artist there, it's a fucking dynamite.
Yeah.
And others, it just doesn't work.
I think part of it is choosing who you're going to work with as well. There's certain creators out there who do very well with what they do, you know, and are very professional about what they do. But would it work with a story with me? You know, I think, I don't know, who am I thinking of now? Milmo, for example. I like Milmo a lot. She's great. She's great company and funny, and she does very well made comics. But I don't think a collaboration between me and her would work.
No.
You know, I think you just got to choose who you work with, and have a good vibe. You know, have a good sort of intention, the similar intention, not a good or bad one, just a similar intention. You know.
Yeah.
Whose work wouldn't you think you would go well with? For a small press creator.
Oh.
This is not saying ill of
them. It's not a criticism. In fact, it's probably, just
your work wouldn't go together.
God.
Trying to think who you wouldn't, in my head, you wouldn't work with.
I mean, I think it's down to a very, very much a stylistic thing. Because.
And the stories to tell.
I have quite a cartoony sort of style, you know, a very sort of animated style.
Yeah.
And if it was a story on a deeply, you know, a deeply personal, you know, sometimes quite dark and honest level, you know, talking about maybe some difficult subjects to talk about, I wouldn't necessarily think that my work would be fitting for it. That's not to say that, you know, if I had a connection with that work, I would do all I can to make the story work. But
yeah.
I think it is right. It's knowing which musicians to get for your band, isn't it, really? You can't just
it's a good way of talking about it.
You can't just sort of say, oh, that person's an amazing guitarist, but they're heavy metal and we play, you know, well, actually heavy metal's awesome. Anyway, that reference is bad, but the theory's there. It's when you're putting these teams together, and we're talking more and more about collaboration, and certainly one of the books I'm going to recommend later, I'm intrigued to the collaborating process on that as well. It's fascinating how these teams come together and how they synchronize and gel. Certainly one that's becoming more interesting for me is an artist who has a comic idea and then goes to a writer to write it for them.
Yeah, I get that occasionally. I don't always do it, but I do get that occasionally, and that's... Yeah. It depends for me, man. Sometimes I apply myself to it and sometimes I don't. And I've written a couple of scripts for people in the last couple of years, and I'm genuinely not as invested in them.
I can understand that.
You have to also, there's such a particular vision with comics. Even if you're a collaborative team, if you really boil it down, you know, even though it's evolved, normally it comes from one person having this idea. It always stems from one person sort of saying, a talking rabbit. And then it evolves and stuff. And some people can be very particular about their vision. Whether it be the writer or artist or whatever, that's probably created more failed comics than we know about. Do you know what I mean?
More shorter relationships, probably. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, we hear about relationships between creators and artists falling out quite a lot.
I find it odd that you would say I've got an idea about five radioactive teenagers from beyond the galaxy or whatever, and I said I've got an idea about a villain, do you fancy fleshing it out? And say I've approached Tony on this, whatever Tony come up with wouldn't be what I was thinking ever.
Yeah
It can't be.
I mean MI666 is a perfect example of that, because, you know, Andy's sort of initial concept and idea and title and stuff, And I was like, and you know, he gave me a list of different titles, and I was, and that one I was just sort of, my brain immediately, the cogs immediately started going. So he kicked off. I can't believe I made a football reference. he made the kickoff. I took it, run with it. Came up with a few ideas, sent it to him, and then it was backwards and forwards until we.
Yeah.
You know, because certainly what I sent to him wasn't the final book that people are getting in their hands now. It was. Then
it depends. It depends on who you're working with, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's the relationship you have is depends on who you're working with. And I've had a different working relationship with everyone I've worked with.
Yeah.
Everyone, Jen Brown, all the way through to Falpy and Nick and all this sort of thing. And I think it was before we pressed record, wasn't it? Earlier, I was describing the creative process that I have with Falpy.
Yeah.
And it's when Falpy comes around the office and we sit there drinking coffee and eating a sandwich. And whatever makes him laugh, we decide to put in the comic.
Yeah.
So I send him stupid ideas and draw the stupid things on bits of paper. And as you well know, because I showed you it earlier, I can't mention it. And that's how we do our creative process, you know. Yeah. Depends who you're working with, Nick. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't just, as an artist, you can't just be told, draw this.
No.
I think that's a mistake. Yeah.
Like I said, I think the idea of the collaborating thing is like, you have a few ideas, you bounce it off one another. Yeah. When you get an idea, you both like, then you both work it and fashion it to something you both think will do well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Everyone's just got to be sensible about the backwards and forwards as well. Even if you don't like someone's idea, you don't just sort of go, well, that's shit. Because if you're going to say something like that, then you're, no one.
And that goes to the editor as well. I was with the new book I've got with Emanuela from the Horizon Cafe. She was saying, "Oh, do you think, can we include that? Do you think we should include that?" And she put a phrase in that was literally the catchphrase of a current TV advert. And I had to say to her, "Look, I think it's a lovely line, but just to let you know, this is on a British TV advert." And she went, "Oh, right, now I get you now." And she was an absolute joy to work with.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Still messaging me now about it. We're still chatting today, you know.
Yeah.
I love having those sort of creative relationships.
Yeah, I think if you kind of got a really great relationship and you respect each other's kind of like understanding of what you're trying to do, when someone says, "I don't think you should use it," or "I think you should do this," and you trust them and you know that they're working for the betterment of the project,
yeah,
that's spot on. That's where you want to be in that sort of creative partnership.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Good. Right, I don't even know what the question was there for that one. We sort of wandered off it. Was it yours, Tom? Sorry, Tom. Yeah.
I think we covered bases there.
Yeah.
So cheers, Tom. We've got one here.
Did he have a chip shot one?
He did have a chip shot one. Let's go back to that. You're heading to the local chippy. You know, it's going to be about a 20-minute wait. What comic do you take with you while you read your battered sausage cooking?
I tell you what.
It's just the question so you can say battered sausage.
Yeah.
I know what you like.
It's all about the battered sausage.
Nicely done, sir.
This show is always about a battered sausage somewhere at some point.
Yeah.
But, no, I would say that is usually, whether you're waiting for your takeaway or you're waiting to get your hair cut or you're waiting for anything, if I know that's going to happen, I'm on my Comixology account. I download whatever I've picked up that week, you know, and haven't had a chance to read. You know, there's certain titles that they download and read immediately. But sometimes I'll just take a punt on something. You know, how many times on this show have I talked about something where I just took a shot and then...
What do you do? Read it on your phone then?
Yeah, I just read it on the phone. Yeah, normally.
Guided view.
Yeah, guided view is best for that.
Yeah.
That's a gimmick in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
And I like it.
Yeah, I like it. It's a gimmick that works for me, actually. Yeah.
I'm a bit of a fan of the smaller size things. If I live in a small village and it's like half a mile walk to the Indian takeaway. So I'll order it on the phone and go and sit there and wait for it. And I like something I can fit in my back pocket. So I quite like sort of digest size comics and stuff like that. I'll read the odd trash novel as well. But I just got Crossfire by Mark Evanier and Dan Spiegel, which is an old Eclipse book. And it's a black and white and it's been brought out in that sort of smaller size.
Okay.
And that's really good. So you can pretty much fit it in the pocket on your cargo shorts. It's that sort of thing. And I'll sit there and read that. I quite like that sort of thing.
Got your legs out of your tummy.
Yeah, baby, you know it. And I'm a great believer in, I don't want to keep my comics nice anymore. Just fuck it. If they get battered, they get read. That's how it works. Yeah.
Dreams that this comic will be worth saying one day. It won't be a fuck all.
They disappeared a while ago, didn't they? Those
speculator market.
Yeah.
I've got a fucking Death of Superman in the black bag somewhere. That's probably worth nothing.
Yeah.
It's whatever the comic is worth to you. That's all that matters now.
I've still got the old Miles Morales first issue in the black bag. You know, the plasticine.
Plasticine.
That might be worth a few quid. I mean,
plasticine as a bag was a bit of a gimmick that never really took off, was it, really? Especially
and plasticine generally is just for making knobs with. Everyone knows that. You know.
You'll make a knob out of any of them.
I know. Mostly myself.
Right. Friend of the show, Kevin Coolin.
Yes.
This is a bit more of a deeper one. I'm currently working on my next comic, and I've been concerned that my protagonist lacks depth. She somehow seems flat, and I'm struggling to see how the reader is going to emphasize with her without a complete rewrite of a painfully long script. I won't go into the next bit before we've tackled that bit of the script, that bit of the question.
I think when you say a painfully long rewrite, I think sometimes...
you're struggling with the same thing that I've struggled with and many writers do. Yeah.
So what was this thing he said? Sorry, is this the thing about...
He's concerned that the protagonist of his comic lacks depth, and he's concerned that readers won't empathise with her.
Then
and
this...
how does he tackle it without going rewrite from page one?
Yeah, sorry, man, yeah. This is. I think what you need to do with that is you need to create a situation where the character is thrown into something they have to cope with or have a conversation with someone in a high drama situation. I think we only learn about people through what they say and what they do.
Yeah.
So you need to create an environment where something of sort of high energy, high danger, high emotion, you know, love, hate, anger, drama, you know, happens, and get them to bounce off someone else.
Yeah, yeah. And I will back that up. You know, it is all about the dialogue. The two recommendations I've got today, it was all in what characters said, and you know how it wasn't necessarily. A lot of the time, it isn't about the big action scene that tells you how badass this person is. Sometimes it's in what they say, and if you're worried about, you know, you've got this lengthy script and you worry about rewriting it. Firstly, never be afraid. I mean, it's always a nightmare thinking about it, but you should never be afraid to tear something apart and build again. But if you don't want to do that, and you think if it's a lengthy script, there's probably a lot of dialogue in there. There's probably a lot of character speech in the things that, like Tony says, it's in the things that people say that people will judge a character on. Certainly in our day-to-day existence, the things that we say will be judged on.
And they say a lot about us. You mean people can tell what we're like from listening to us on this podcast. Yeah. And I like to think we've got, you know, not a huge amount of depth, but we have got some depth to our personalities you know. So give them something to decide about. Get them to talk about something.
Yeah.
Even if it's just walking in a bar and talking to the barman.
Yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of things you can do. And
if they're a mute character, just say that they're a mute character.
Yeah.
Then it's in the actions and the emotional acting that person has. Once again, in situations, you have to put the person in a situation, because if it's just a mute character walking through a woodland for 20 pages, no one's going to learn anything about them.
Yeah.
If that character walks through a woodland, comes across a sick like a injured animal, what they do and the way they look at this animal and the way that their actions then immediately give the reader, they know, they're either going to go, oh, that person's really nice, I like them, or... oh, they're a piece of shit, I hate them.
And look at TV series as an example. How many TV series or movies do they drop you straight into someone running away?
Yeah.
Because you know that on the face of that person, you've got so much showing, you know, whether they're frightened or they're energized or they're heading towards something or they're angry or they're chasing something or they want to do something. You know, you get personality from that. And that's why a lot of these TV series and comics, I know Bendis talks a lot about it in his book, drop them in the action straight away because you see personality through trauma. Yeah.
What about you, Dan? What do you think?
Yeah.
Definitely the points you've covered, I'll use a bit salient.
Hey, word of the week. Word of the week is salient. Write that down.
But showing your character in contrasts. So if you want to show a virtuous character, you put a virtuous character among some normal people, you might think, oh, gosh, she's a bit fucking snooty or up herself. If you put them amongst someone, a load of people who are craven and horrible, those virtues kind of like lift them up. Mm. And you might be sort of say, well, he or she's making a stand against these fucking horrible people around her, and it's kind of a bit more easier to kind of empathize. It's a tricky one, because you never really know. You can infuse your characters with kind of personality and character and hope that people like them and are on their side. But I guess one of the things as a writer, you never know, like, how they're going down with readers.
Yeah.
There's times when I've written characters and I thought, oh, this, people are going to like this one, and then not been too bothered. And other characters which I've just written them and people said, oh, I really like it. It's my favourite one.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was like, fuck knows.
Yeah.
And it seems to be like trying to catch smoke.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be the heroes either. People get really attached to, and it's just all about how well the character is written. You know, people get attached to real pieces of shit. That may be so that they can be satisfied when that person gets dispatched off, but it still means, you know, people get really pissed. If I mean, it's an extreme reaction, but just say Robert Kirkman writes a horrible character for The Walking Dead. I mean, most of them are horrible, but they're so horrible that, you know, you get those fucking stupid people saying, well, what'd you do that for? What, you know, that person's horrible. Death threat, blah, 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 blah. You know, all that loud shit that is just fucking hot air. In a fucked up way, he's doing something right because he's created a character that has given someone an emotional response to. And that's all comics, you know. If you're making comics that aren't for any kind of emotional response, you may just want to make comics that make people happy. You know, you still got to engage people. And I mean, every week for 2 hours we try to engage you with a load of fucking bollocks that comes out of our mouths, but you know, and a lot of people out there judge us on it.
Isn't one of his questions relating to bollocks?
It is, yeah. So for
what a segue.
What I'd like to ask is, how come Brian and Pascal appear to be from distant countries? Or is Pascal's accent just a pretentious affectation?
Yeah, I think I'm worried about that as well. I think it comes from years of sort of non-commando behaviour inside my pants. I think it's something I'm working on, Kev. Thanks for the concern. Kev's a Palinese. Yeah. Very concerned about my balls. And my left ball is a psycho. He's coming soon from Tribute Press.
I mean... We chuckle, but it probably will.
Might do, yeah. It might be an extra 2-pager for the next Kickstarter.
Yeah. I tell you what, let's finish up with one last question.
Oh, okay. From,
Joseph Simmons. It's a very lighthearted one, this one. Since the Awesome Comic Podcast has fostered one of the friendliest and constructive Facebook groups I've ever seen, how about an awesome drink and draw where we all go to some place, you know, and drink and draw? I would say an awesome comic con, but there probably isn't enough of you going, and I imagine you all have enough going on as it is. Well, I guess with... the COVID shit going on, we won't be doing that anytime soon.
Well, a nice drink and draw on the Teams or on the Zoom or something is not a bad idea. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I wrote that one down actually. My earlier was I think that's a brilliant idea. I would love to do it. Yeah.
We could certainly do like a kind of a Zoom
drink and draw. Yeah, maybe there's a there's scope for, we're literally brainstorming this on air, folks. Maybe there's scope for, like you say, a day and a date. Where gather together your friends and your creators and your colleagues or whatever, you know, it doesn't have to be anyone who, if you don't write or draw or you're just a fan of comics and you want to get involved, and everyone have these little gangs of Zoom drink and draws, where everyone's just chilling out and chatting and drawing, and then what is it, over the next week we post them all on the Facebook page, everyone posts up their artwork, and then
that's a good shout.
Just a day of everyone just getting together and
because we could have one.
Yeah.
We could do one.
We are. We could. We might as well just do one with us. Us lot. Just, well, it's just an excuse for us to hang out and talk then.
Yeah.
And then, we'll organise something like that then, where it's just it's almost like an evolved version of your art threads, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, then people love taking part in that and love seeing stuff.
It's been really popular, yeah.
Yeah,
so, all styles welcome, all levels of ability as well.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take the interactivity and the whole community thing to the next level. We'll sort out a date, we'll post it up, and it will be the first awesome pod drink and draw. I mean, we're not going to organise your groups for you. We can barely organise.
Well, we talked to some techies to see what's the best way of doing it.
I mean, I will say we've been on some Zooms that are quite enormous. So just be careful about the size of your group, because everyone will want to talk at the same time. But yeah, if it's going to bring people together, especially there's a lot of us who are, whether you're working from home or just
listen. If you guys put one together and it's during the day or during the evening, and I see it, I'll hop on. I gotta tell you, I always do that whenever I see John Tucker or Aaron Rackley's. If I can, I'll jump on it and just have a chat.
So this isn't something, you know, for streaming video or whatever. This is just people getting together, and I am all for that. So we've talked about, we've had crazy ideas about different sort of community things and awesome pod related.
We've got the 5 years coming up next month.
Bloody hell. There's a lot. I mean,
6th of July.
Who knows what it's going to be like when we reach episode 300? But which we will one day. But you know, so you never know what we might come up with. But I think in the meantime, I think this is a brilliant idea to bring lots of.
Yeah, if you're going to do one, I look at the Facebook quite a lot. So just give me a bit of notice, and I'll make sure it gets passed through to the Facebook group. The link. Yeah. If you're going to do one, just stick it on and see who jumps on. I'll probably jump on for a bit. One of us will probably jump on for a bit if we've got time. And but just make sure if you can personal message me first or something like that, just to say, I'm just put a link on because I'm about to do a drink and draw. Then let me know, and I'll know to go on Facebook and authorize the post sort of thing.
And if we pick a specific date. To do it. If you can't do it that date, but your group can do it the next day, do it that next day. It doesn't matter as long as you're doing it and having fun.
I guarantee if you put it on the Facebook page, you'll get 5 or 6 at least people, and whatever time of day.
You know, we're not going to put a time. So if we just said, I don't know, next Sunday, which it won't be, well, it could be, we don't know, but it can be any time. You know, just go amongst yourselves and just have fun and just bring the community together a bit in these, quite frankly, difficult times for a lot of people.
Did I see another question was something about manga or something, is that right?
Yes, Sam Webster's asked about doing a manga episode. The romance stuff, we're very much kind of ignorant on the subject.
We've talked about this, and it's something we are definitely going to do. It's a genre that, much like,
I'll tell you what, I don't read enough manga. Someone throw me a manga suggestion, as long as it's not Junji Ito, because that's the one that everyone seems to mention. But if someone throw, you know what my taste.
We got that covered, the Junji Ito.
Yeah, throw me something else. Yeah. So somebody throw me a manga thing, and I'll talk about it next week, because I know fuck all about manga.
Now, you are, with that in mind, you got to be prepared, Tony, that a lot of mangas is like, well, here's this one. But, you know, there's been 78 volumes of it.
Don't make it like a baby talk one either. I don't know.
Tony, you will fucking love Berserk.
Will I? Okay, right.
You will fucking love that. Yes, great.
Is it on Comixology, that one? Because I quite like to be able to read it in Guided View, where I don't have to, because my eye goes the wrong way, because I'm an old bastard.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? That's one of the reasons I don't do it, because you used to get it translated to Western style, but you don't seem to get that as much these days. Yeah,
I think, I'm not sure if that guy, he said he didn't mind it being flipped, because he said the whole work's kind of really messed up anyway, so he didn't mind it.
Dan's very kindly gifted me a couple of volumes of Berserk, and it's fucking
crazy. I'll have a look for it.
Kind of wandering swordsman
trope. Yeah, I like all that sort of thing.
He's a right C-U-N-T. You'll really like it. That's the kind of the anti-hero. He's horrible, but the things that he's up against, there's so much more that you can side with him over it.
Is it Berserk with a Z? I'm not thinking that right, am I? Is it?
No, I'll send you a link.
I'm just searching for it on Comixology. See if it's on there.
So yes, and also chuck Tony a couple of suggestions in obviously
on the group,
on the group, or on email. So
awesome. I like a bit of experimentation.
awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. So
I can't see it on Comixology, guys. I don't know.
We'll find you a copy somehow, Tony.
Right,
is that all it for the questions? I believe
That's about. I was quite taken aback, but it was going to be a regular feature of essentially asking you a question or two. We won't be able to divert every single episode to answering questions, more than happy to take them.
As always, with the Q&A sort of sections, I always think they're going to descend into madness. But thank you, folks. I think you got us to think genuinely, sensibly about these things. Right. So, yeah. So with that in mind, from thinking to shout-outs. Do we have any shout-outs?
Yeah.
Oh, Dan, take it away.
Ooh, got a couple. Let me just get the tab on the browser fired up. Okay, I mentioned this last week. Got Kia Wordsmith issue 2.
Ah, yes.
Out now on Kickstarter. Please go to the link.
What's going on?
A young woman, Kia Wordsmith, frees a creature from a wizard's tower and begins to realize this act of kindness has consequences. It's currently absolutely smashing its target. It's got 16 days to go. Written by Dave West and art by Ian Ashcroft, who's an absolute fucking dynamo.
Beast. Yeah.
Yeah. Check that one out. That looks fantastic. The next one, a favorite of mine, we've got our final Halloween, issue 3. It's been packaged up as books 1 to 3. That's absolutely smashed its goal. Its pledge is £666. You'll like that one, V.
Nice.
And it's written by Mike Garley. And the art is by the other Mike. Oh, God. Slips my mind. But that's fantastic. I recommended that comic before, and I really recommend you check it out.
Graham.
That's the one. And finally, we've got Access Denied, a one-shot sci-fi adventure comic about forbidden love between from an android from Mars and a human from Earth, written by Sam George London, which is doing great as well. Kickstarter, it seems to be the time to run a Kickstarter because everyone's buying comics. I know us three have basically, it's a never-ending Amazon deliveries to our house.
It really is,
delivering comics every day.
Yeah.
I'm trying to go through eBay because there's a lot of like smaller comic shops who like set up online stores.
I've been doing, actually. Yeah. It's also good for me eBay because my missus doesn't share an account with me on eBay.
Nice.
And if you want to buy some comics, then go to andyblawcomics.bigcartel.com and you can pick up your copy of MI666.
There you go.
Which is written by me. We've mentioned it a couple of times this week. I feel like a horrible shill. But
not at all.
And artwork by the brilliant Andy Bloor. Thank you to everyone who's picked up an issue. We've been really touched by the good feedback we've got from everyone. It's been really nice. It's been in the works for a while, so it's nice to see people who are enjoying it. Extra shout out to Martin Stiff and Sarah Harris and Alfie Gallagher, who've taken some great photos of their copies, because Andy's cover has like a badass sort of hand with 666 in it, sort of in the palm, and some people have done some very sort of inventive ways of is it a selfie? Yeah, it is kind of, yeah, not, is it? Well, I guess you are taking a picture of your arm with the comic book cover.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's made us laugh, and also it's given us an extra marketing tool, because then you can retweet that and say, isn't this Ace got our comic? Buy it, please.
I was gonna send you one, but we're not talking about that.
Oh no. Oh well, I mean, I honestly thought it was your forearm.
Can I just pimp tributepress.bigcartel.com for all your Atomic Hercules needs? So yes. one and two are on there. We've still got some postcards and stuff like that left as well, so you can get a digital or a physical copy. Physical copies are £4. Also got some Hall Chronicles on there left. There are only a few of them left, so if you want one, tributepress.bigcartel.com. There you go.
Nice. There's some great stuff coming up from them.
Yeah.
And if you want to buy any books of Vanguard, go to Comic House. They're all on there.
Nice.
Oh dear. So yes, so far a wonderful show, and how can we cap off a wonderful show with some fantastic comic recommendations?
Yeah, you've got some crackers apparently, V, so I think you got to go first, man.
Yes.
Yeah
set right. The bar high, and then yes. me and Tony are gonna do our limbo dancing under
that bar. Yeah, well, okay. My first one, we've all got a couple of recommendations each. First one is going to be one I've been meaning to talk about for a little while, and that is a comic called Drexler, issues 1 and 2. I backed the Kickstarter for issues 1 and 2 a while ago, and I had the PDFs, Read it, loved it, but I wanted to do it justice and actually write up some notes. God, you know I'm getting serious when I write some notes. And then lo and behold, I wanted to reread it and I couldn't find the PDFs. Oh, have you ever done that, folks, where you know the Kickstarter download link, you've missed it, or you've misplaced? I think I downloaded it on my work computer and then I didn't have the files or whatever because I'm working from home now. And yeah, but thankfully Nathan Kelly, the creator of Drexler, is a top guy. And
he's a follower of us, isn't he? He follows the pod.
And after I messaged him, he very kindly sent me some fresh PDFs, which I've safely put into the lockbox folder of comic PDFs I had, and I also passed them on to the
Nathan from? Is he from the States?
He is from the States. So the creative team for Drexler is Bob Sally is the writer, Nathan Kelly is the artist and creator, Marco Pagnotta is the colorist, and HDE is the letterer. I'm guessing that's a person.
I think I'm friends with Bob Sally on Facebook as well. He's a good writer and he does quite a lot.
Oh yes, yeah. And this is another example of it. So you know, all that PDF nonsense aside, and what timing to mention this book. As I just got an email the other day saying Scout Comics, who you may have heard me mention a couple of times, they have actually picked up Drexler.
Good stuff.
It will be released through them hopefully next year. So Nathan says he's very excited about it, which is continuing the trend of this publisher I've just come across, who are consistently putting out badass comics I want to read. But until before then, Nathan has been kickstarting this series. I think there's going to be 4 issues, and there will be a new campaign coming up this fall for the next issue, for issue 3. So I think he's going to be doing a lot off his own back, and then to get it out into the further masses, I think he's going with Scout Comics. It's not like it's 1 and 2 and then you've got to buy them all again from Scout Comics. That's how it, you know, I think he's doing it all off his own back, and then they're going to publish it in the next year as well. So I urge you all to keep your eyes, ears and digital radars open for that, because this comic kicks all angles of ass. It's just so good. The log line is, when his sister summons him home to help solve a string of grisly murders, the town outcast must outrun his own demons to help save the town that cast him out. Which sounds like the setup for your standard homecoming crime thriller, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
But this book ain't that. it's a dark action sort of sci-fi. It's got monsters, mutants, awesome technology, and unfolding mysteries on top of that too. This is just in 2 issues as well that I'm talking about. Drexler himself, and we've talked about this before, about how having a main character who their name is the title of the book, haven't we? I know.
The naming convention.
Yeah, and this Drexler's just a cool name, which I so it's quite cool to have that sort of character, you know, a character with a cool name, and then that is the front and center of the book. But he himself is a very layered character, and like I said, there's only 2 issues, but with each issue you get a little bit more information about him. I think it sort of drip feeds in. It seems like some of his history is pretty traumatic in his own way. And like, I haven't read anything by Bob Sally before that I know of,
right? Okay.
But the writing on this is there's absolutely no fat on the bones whatsoever. It's just razor sharp, I think. Like straight up character work, set up and dialogue, and it immediately lets you know what kind of people you're dealing with, which is something we just talked about earlier. I just thought this is exactly what I'm going to be talking about later. So from character to character, or creature, I will say that, you know, you immediately get a grip of sort of the person you're dealing with, and then they can those characters can then evolve, and they're certainly drip feeding these mysteries and relationships. Plus the book hurtles along at one hell of a pace. Tell me if you've ever had this, like with a character titled series.
Yeah,
and I think the 90s is obviously a brilliant example of when this happened a lot. The debut issue, the first issue, is usually filled with like sort of a narrative focused on the hero or heroine alone, you know, and it's just, you don't really know where the story is, but even by the end of the issue, because it's spent so much time of, oh look, we love our main character so much. Have you ever had that where the story isn't much of anything by the time you've gotten to the end of the first issue? You know, I've certainly read a few issues in the 90s that were like that.
But I was going to say Major X, but that was shit throughout.
Did that ever finish?
I think it did, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Ooh, yeah, yeah. Blimey. Bad Rock and Violator was better, I think.
I mean, what could top that?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what could. Troll.
£7.
£7.
On the South Bank, as we speak.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Definitely need to get my copy of that. But yeah, with the issue one, it does an initial setup of like Drex's abilities, and I did say that right, abilities, before rolling you straight into like the bigger story, which by the end of issue one, you know, I was immediately like, because I backed the Kickstarter, which was one and two, I was like, I love that, having the two issues. So it's like, oh, brilliant, I want more. Oh, there it is, issue two. I just open that up. Now, art-wise, it's supremely atmospheric. And very sort of inky and kinetic. I know Kelly has a style sort of reminiscent of like Eduardo Risso of 100 Bullets fame.
Okay,
sort of, he has that sort of masterful use of shadows and facial expressions as well. And that great sort of stylistic choice, you know, when you see like a silhouette of a person, but so it's just completely black ink, but then you have like the eyes or the mouth then stands out from it. It's something that Frank Miller does as well. Yeah. You know, it's handled really well. It gets a lot of atmosphere over. And there's also like lots of great visuals for certain sci-fi moments. One that I particularly love, and minor spoilers, they partly use it in the logo, which is quite cool. But when Drexler himself sort of transfers, which is basically like a teleportation bit of technology kind of thing, it's sort of he's got like a sort of a, he hasn't got a massive suit or whatever. This is a guy in a hoodie and he's got like a cool mask and stuff, but he's obviously got a lot of tech going on. But when he sort of like teleports, it breaks him down, breaks him apart at like a molecular level before sort of realigning everything back together where he needs to be, which sounds pretty cool enough when I put it like that. But Nathan's given it like an awesome look where the character seemingly disintegrates into small squares or blocks which sort of like get smaller and then they disappear, and then they sort of reappear when he arrives. So it's almost like he's downloaded and then uploaded in the place where he needs to be, and it just looks really, really cool. When it first happened, I thought that's just a really good
sort. Yeah, I'm just looking through Nathan's Twitter now. We've been buddies on Twitter for a while, but every second post is just gorgeous artwork. Yeah. This geezer, he's got some great influences.
So good.
Yeah.
And trust me, folks, as always, I'm murdering the description of the great visual moments he's got. But no panel of this book is left to waste. Every page is jam packed with awesome art. He clearly loves what he's doing. I will say kudos too to Pagnotta and HDE for completing the package, and sort of it's another self-published book that can sit proudly amongst anything from bigger publishers. Sits right alongside, you know, there's definitely a thought to, if we're going to put something out, it's going to be, there's no shortcuts, you know, even when it comes to like the credits pages, everything's got to be laid out right, you know, and that always gets me. If you know, you have to care about every fucking page of your comic, you know, not just the sequential bits. Everything needs to work. Drexler's actually Nathan's creation. This is why it interests me, because he enlisted Sally to write it, so it would be interesting to see how that came about, especially with the chat we had last week on collaborating and writing and what we've touched upon this week. Who knows, maybe that's something you'll hear sooner rather than later.
We need to get this dude on, man. We need to get him on.
I also came to discover Nathan's work on a book called Snarl from Insane Comics, which I thought I got on Comixology, but I can't seem to find it on Comixology now. I can't remember. I may have talked about it on the show before, but if not, if you can find that book, it's also badass. That's a sort of supernaturally sort of crime story as well. That's badass as well. So it's just more and more pages of this artwork, so go seek that out too. You can follow him at nkellynk28 on Twitter. Look up Drexler on Kickstarter to see examples of what I've been rambling on about for the past like 5 to 10 minutes. You won't regret it. It's a great book. It's a great character. And of course, like when the Kickstarter comes out, we'll share about it as well, because then you'll be able to catch up on everything. So that is my first one.
Fucking, I love it when people who are like listeners or, you know, people we chat to on here get jobs with big companies. It's the best thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I love hearing about that, the little success stories. Yeah. Good stuff, man. Yeah, congratulations, Nathan. Yeah, obviously richly deserved.
Yeah.
God,
yeah.
Okay, who's next?
D, man, do you want to go?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Should I do my comicsology ones first off?
Okay, baby cakes.
The first new one, the Black Rubric, which has got a fucking awesome cover. It's all about, well, let me read the team first. It's art by Katie Fleming, script by Christopher Mole, lettering by Hassan Otsemi Alabu, cover by Benjamin A. E. Philby, logo design Joe Stone, and pin-up by Katie Svotsky. And it's like
Joe Stone's done the pin-up. Well, Joe's a pal of ours, isn't he?
The logo, it's great. Yeah. It's
okay.
Essentially tells the story of like a heavy metal band and how the lead singer seems to be getting messages from some kind of demonic source telling him to write and sing a music, sing a particular song. And the art style is really, really nice in this. You kind of very kind of manga anime, but the metal scenes when they're playing a gig feels really energetic. And I think they're kind of somewhere up North America in like a colder climate, and they go outside and you can start seeing their breath and the snow, and it's really well done. I kind of went in thinking, oh, what's this going to be about? And I ended up really enjoying it, kind of blasted through a very light, kind of lighthearted comic. The second one, I'm not all the way through reading yet, but I just thought I'd give it a go because it's on the new comics and why not? And now I'm just getting an ad, so I've got to fill the time while the ad goes.
There's a man trapped in a basement.
So the story synopsis, Left is comic's called Left, published by Blurred Line Comics. It's written, drawn, the whole shebang's done by a chap called Stephen Ingram. And the story synopsis, Left is a story about a girl who is trying to keep away from a cult where she was a member of in the past. They're trying to get her to return to the fold. Sam Scott receives a letter from her past he shortly had successfully run away from, the pseudo-scientific cult she's to be a member of. Will she continue to run, or can she confront what she'd been running from all this time? And it's a chunky old comic. I think it was fucking shit. I was like 100 pages in. I just clicked on a comic and I've got to go for another advert. But adverts are what pays people for running. I'm about 100 pages in. It's a 242 page comic, and there's a lot of layers to this. There's a definite sense of dread as the lead characters obviously been tracked down over the years by someone who used to be in the cult through social media and is now actively following her and finding out what she's doing. And there's a subtext that she's got an ability or an innate sense that seems to be coming out in her comic creations. And I think it might be a bit meta and break the fourth wall as the story plays out. I get that feeling through it. So I'm really interested to see where the comic goes, and I'll let you know how that plays out. Maybe give it a read yourself, see what you think.
Oh, I know Stephen. Yeah, I've reviewed a couple of his books. Yeah, he does some great stuff, Stephen. Yeah, he's I like his style. Quite indie, isn't it? And
very
personal.
Much so.
And I'll give that a go. I didn't realise that was on there actually. Yeah, that's one of the ones I haven't read of his. So I'll definitely give that a go.
Yeah, nice one. Nice. And I've got a couple more, but I'll save that for a second.
Okay, I'll go Shaman Kane number 5, created by Dave Brown and our buddy Evil in the Dark Matter Dimension is the title of the story. All done by Dave. Dave doesn't let anyone else do anything involved in his comics. He's a one-man, factory. Portals have been opened between dimensions. Life continues to survive after the Zed War, a.k.a. the Zombie War. And the story opens on Shaman Kane, character who's a werewolf, who we later find out is another character, Obsidian Dark, who's a sort of techno ninja, and Annie, who's the ship's AI, and they are literally getting beaten back by a wave of sort of winged creatures. It then flashes back to 2 days earlier, and Shaman Kane has been called back to Cubula Khan, that's a great name, and asked to use a portal generator to find out the cause of the Zed Plague. We get some history of the shamans, how the first shaman was trained, an advanced and an ancient civilization called the Architects were involved, and he brings the aforementioned team plus a dude called a Bloodhound, who turns out to be the werewolf character, who looks a bit like a sort of monk but is in fact a tracker. And it goes full on fucked up, whacked out science fiction gorgeousness. And I showed you guys some pages in it before I come on, and I think this is Dave's best work. Genuinely do. Awesome. I think his colour work in it is brilliant. He's created a real, from a character who didn't have quite the depth before, has got this real depth of backstory now and really interesting sort of sci-fi world building type stuff. He's got certainly Dave is working on giving him this sort of mysterious mythology as part of it. It's part of a continuing story that goes on and on. Dave's gone sort of full on heavy metal in it, I think. I showed you the double page spread, didn't I, guys? Is that right?
Yes.
You see that?
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, and it's he's really gone out. He's really gone balls to the wall in it. It's really jumped to the top of my stack and I've worked with Dave a couple of times. We've done a couple of stories together. And I really like his work, and he's pretty much now 2000 AD ready, I think. I really do believe that. It ends on a cliffhanger. You'll probably have to read a couple of bits of the previous story. It's worth getting the previous issues. They're all very good. You can get your copy. Head to Comixy, C-O-M-I-C-S-Y, comixy.co.uk/D Broughton. Or on Twitter, you can find him at D Broughton David. So D-B-R-O-U-G-H-T-O-N, capital D-A-V-I-D, D Broughton David. And you can find his stuff. Yeah, he's also, if you go on his Facebook, he started putting out some. He has a chat while he's drawing and inking and stuff, and that sort of stuff makes the day go quicker, doesn't it? When we're in this lockdown hell we currently occupy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I like watching that stuff now. I'm really warm to watching these sort of creative videos of. There's a little series of them if you follow him on Facebook. Yeah, good stuff. Good, nice work, Dave. Good stuff, man. Yeah, there you go. That's my one.
Nice.
Dad, I'm gonna go last.
Okay, I've got Mahoney's issue 3, the Kickstarter through this week, because I foolishly put my address as my work address, and obviously I've not been into the office for fucking months now. But the young lady who kind of runs the office sent it on to me, so that's fantastic, loving that. And I've got volume 2 and 3 of Southern Bastards. I read through 2 today, and Vince said it was very football heavy, but this, calling back to Kev Cullen's work about comic about making your protagonist like relatable. This whole story is about the antagonist of the first volume, and it makes them relatable. And they're fucking horrible.
They are a piece of shit.
Shit, but they're surrounded by worse pieces of shit. So
really, are they?
Yeah, they're people around him.
They're all horrible.
Yeah, but it sort of like gives you a reason. You can see where he's come from, and he's a fucking horrible person.
Yeah,
but he seems to be shaped by his environment and upbringing to be this horrible person, and he's just maximizing it. Still horrible, but you kind of understand where he's coming from.
Yeah.
So yeah, I look forward to cracking into book 3. This week.
It's very clever that arc was. I didn't expect the second arc of the story to be about the bad guy, really. And it's really clever how they sort of flip-flop that so that you had that grounding. So when you got to the third arc, which is essentially when the kind of story kind
of. Because his daughter comes back. Like in the end of the first arc, his daughter is on the phone, isn't she?
Yeah.
And then that's exactly the same ending of the second arc when.
Yeah. It's and sort of like, does that have the similar, amazing mate. Reveal of what his daughter actually is?
That's in the first arc, that she's a Marine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that whole sort of like, as they say in RoboCop 2, oh, they're going to kick someone's ass.
And in fact, she's a Marine. She's a girl of mixed race.
Yeah.
And she's going to come to this deep south town that is fucking racist as fuck.
Yeah.
It's going to go off.
And it's a powder.
I don't know how it's going to go off. I've not read it yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
How many trades are there of this? Is it up to? It's more than three, is it?
I think it's only 3.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, they're taking their sweet time, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think they've taken a bit of break. I'm not. Yeah. It's one of those things that, like anything, if they take a break for long enough, you know, you ain't getting it again.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I must catch up on that. I'm a few issues behind on that one. Mm. Yeah. I've got them sitting here.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it's me now because you want to go last, don't you, V?
Yeah.
I was inspired by listening to. Have any of you listened to the Kayfabe podcast or like, what's the YouTube?
Is that the one with Jim Rugg and
Tom Scioli?
Is it Jim
Rugg? Yeah. And that little bunch of guys, and they do some really great interviews, and they did one with Gary Groth, who used to run the Comics Journal and runs Fantagraphics and all that sort of thing. And it's quite an eye opener, actually. They tend to get a like. Don't listen to the Chris Claremont one. Christ almighty, where my life went listening to Chris Claremont. listen to the Dave Gibbons one, or the, you know, Brendan McCarthy was very good on it, and Gary Groth's exceptional on it. And I like listening to these old guys because they don't watch the party line to keep, you know, they just say what the fucking truth is. And there's a really funny anecdote in it about how he used to live with Starenko, and how Starenko wouldn't let them go upstairs in his house. And kept going downstairs and shouting at them. And very strange, very strange. But it's interesting. But as part of it, Groth says he bemoans the lack of comics journalism, something that I often bemoan. And he says the reason for it is no one is willing to pay for comics journalism anymore because our fan community is not big enough anymore. And I think he's right. I think there's not the money to pay for us to write comics journalism, so thus we're tied into doing it for free, and we're tied into the hope that we get free comics sometimes. You know, some people are like that. So I decided, right, fuck it, I'm going to buy off eBay an old fan zine, and I'm going to read it and see how different it is from what we see these days. You know, because I like the fact that sometimes we used to be a lot more honest about what we were doing back then. So I bought BEM 27. It's a comics news fanzine. It was produced by a couple of guys. I think they're from Worcester. Martin Locke and Mike Cruden. It's 45p from 1980, this one, and it's the Sez Dez issue. Dez skin is on the front, back when he had a sort of full head of blonde hair, a beard, and he's got those slightly dodgy 1970s, early 80s glasses that are slightly tinted. Do you know the ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, look, there may be different times. If I saw one with some of these on now, I'd probably think Sex Offender. You know what I mean? But back then, different times. The image is drawn by Dave Gibbons. So the cover is drawn by Dave Gibbons, if you can believe it. I know Dave and Dez are good friends. I think Dez was Dave's best man at his wedding, I think he told me. Let's have a look at this. So I started looking through it. The text is incredibly dense. To such a point where, you know, an old man like me in his late 30s was finding it hard with his glasses on to make it out. But there's loads of stuff in it. Just to give you a taste of when it was from, so the comics on the stand at the time were Daredevil 163, Roger McKenzie and early Miller, Joseph Rubinstein, King Conan number one, Roy Thomas was still writing it, John Buscema was drawing it, Ernie Chan was inking it. 2000 AD was on Prog 154, which had Sam Slade, Robo Hunter, Day of the Droids. Hang on a minute, this is before you were born, V, isn't it? Is that right?
What was it?
1980.
The year of my birth, yes.
The year of your birth, lovely. Okay, Flash.
You're our Lord!
On Thursday will be his birthday. The Flash 283, Barry Allen finding out that is who killed his wife. Legion 266, Bouncing Boy and Geo Damsel finally return to the league. Louise Jones, now Louise Simonson, started at Marvel as an editor, and Gold Key Comics pretty much closed their doors and stopped distributing comics. So it gives you a taste of the period it was from. The fan world was different then, and there was no internet, obviously, and no social media, but fans kind of said what they meant. And there was no real comic shops either, so fans kind of were dependent on what they bought. This is a British fanzine, don't forget, so kind of dependent on what they bought in newsagents often. There was a few comic shops, but very few. Before the Dez interview, Dez is a character. I think we've all realized that over the years. You know, he's had this sort of personality, but there's a whole page comic strip done of him about a journalist interviewing Dez Skinful, and it's properly digs him out a bit. It's like really sarcastic, shows him in a suit with a big sort of businessman bow tie sitting behind a desk smoking a cigar and saying he's charging for the interview, and he starts screaming when the interviewer says continuity. It's just a bit weird. So the interview with Dez, and Dez again pulls no punches in this. I wrote down a couple of quotes from him. So talking about, it's Neil Adams, and about page rates and stuff. He says, comic books can't afford such fine pieces of work. There's a commercial standard you have to meet. Anything beyond that standard is totally self-indulgent. That's interesting, isn't it?
Mm.
So he's saying, look, get the work done, get it out the door. It needs to go in the comic this month. Don't worry about noodling all over it. I think, I don't know, maybe he's right, maybe he's not. There's a life beyond comics, and Marvel have to move into that space. Is an interesting one. In 1980, that was. So I think Doctor Who Weekly had just sort of started around that time. So we're sort of seeing that move. Then the interview says, do the ideas come from you? And Deskin says, it would be terribly vain to say that they all come from me, but the majority of them do. Yeah. Mm. So, okay. All right, Des. Now, Des, this is a bit what I was talking about earlier about facts and figures. So Des estimates that comics fandom in the UK is somewhere between 30,000 and 40,000 Marvel fans. That's something, isn't it?
Fucking hell, yeah.
What is it now? You know, we're almost at the point where major comic companies can't be bothered to distribute their comics to us. Well, yeah. It looks like that's been fixed, actually, doesn't it? It looks like Diamond UK have taken over. But 30,000 to 40,000, that would float a good Marvel comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get them all buying a Marvel comic, that would float it. That would be doing well. And he says, I mean, compare that to today. That's what I'm thinking. He talks about comics companies in competition as compared to being complementary. And I think that's an important thing, is we often think of Marvel and DC being in competition, but one probably wouldn't survive without the other these days. And we've seen the example of that perfectly by the fact if DC didn't distribute to comic shops, they would lose enough revenue that would cause them to close their doors, perhaps. Yeah, so I think we're all in it to win it to a certain extent. And I think even then, there's something he was considering. There's a stupidly lengthy letters column, like goes on forever. People are writing, you know, and it's all typewriter written letters on this thing. Bill Mantlo wrote a letter in telling Bem that they'd missed, that they'd missed the point of in the recent issue of Micronauts about what they'd written. there's a jam piece in the centre pages, like a sort of art piece, and on this page are Paul Neary, Frank Bruner, Brian Bolland, Hunt Emerson, Jerry Bingham, John Bolton, Dave Gibbons, and Kevin O'Neill. Basically, that's a jam piece to die for. Yeah,
good, yeah.
Some of the reviews made me laugh. So I was watching and I'm thinking, Christ almighty, I just love to have the honesty in reviews that we don't see today, that, you know, reviews today that are sort of summary of it and then someone thinking of a few lovely adjectives to say how brilliant it was. X-Men 130. Do you know what X-Men 134 was famous for?
No.
It was when Dazzler started. So,
okay.
The review starts, wow, that's Dazzler, huh? I'm underwhelmed. And then there was a review of She-Hulk 1, and the first line was, I find it in no way appealing. Oh, yeah. Then they, for some reason, they present a review of one of the actual reviewers. So somebody's written in and reviewed the reviewer, and it says, Edwards, which is the guy who's reviewing, seems to enjoy reviewing comics. He takes time to be fair and remains unbiased in current trends and fans. He managed to do this all the time whilst keeping his eyes closed. That was but they're printing all this stuff. You know, it's like, you know, look at the letters pages when they do exist in Marvel Comics. They're all about how brilliant it was. Even in Marvel Comics, you had negative letters in, didn't you?
Yeah.
There's an interview with Rick Marshall, who at that point had just become an ex-Marvel editor, and he fucking ain't happy. He just spends the whole interview slagging off policies and stuff. Brilliant. And I think, you know, we need to get back to that. We can't. We are here to hold these people to, you know, to count when their comics are shit. Yeah. Not to just say, oh, that's brilliant. You know, it's like, otherwise, comics will just decline in quality, and we'll be fucked.
Yeah.
And no one will buy them.
That kind of carry all thing of like, if you've got something bad to say, you're a hater, you get blocked.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah, no. Make it constructive. Yeah. I mean, I understand a bit of humor and a bit of sarcasm. I think everyone does.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But we can't just be fluffing these people all the time. And Ben is a great magazine. It's full of so much passion and knowledge about the thing. The Deskin interview is probably like novella length in this. Yeah, if you want to read it.
Mm.
The back page was an advert for Dangerous Visions in Malden in Essex, which was you would recognise this advert, you guys, because it was it's mostly very butt heavy. It's like a big sci-fi lady's butt right in the middle of the page, which obviously sold well to these sort of guys. And then I think there's an advert for the comic shop that used to be in Bristol. Is it Dangerous Visions? I can't. No, no, it's not Dangerous. I can't remember the name of it now. But yeah, I meant to read it out, but I can't find it now. But yeah, and that's. I mean, we are the equivalent. We talked about this before. We are the equivalent of the fanzine now, the podcast. If every week we come on and go, oh, how brilliant is this? This is, or we don't. You know, we don't give it any kind of critical or passionate review. Yeah, then we're going to fade away, guys. It's all going to be baby talk and fucking, you know.
But the main thing there was like the big kind of websites, like you said before many times in your review stuff, they get access to this stuff, and you give, if you give a bad review, you don't get it anymore.
Yeah.
So they're kind of, it's
fuck it, buy it. Do you know what I mean? A lot of my reviews now, I buy them. You know, fucking buy them. Don't,
what are they going to say?
Yeah.
It's a bit different if you kind of go and see the new Star Wars film and you get to see it a week early. Maybe that's different, but you're fucking selling your soul if you're just...
You're not chasing it now, And I've heard people saying I won't be allowing reviews on my comics. Well, you got fucking no choice.
Yeah.
You want to sell them.
There is that.
Yeah. There you go.
It's if you put it out there, people will review it.
Yeah, and that's the way you should be. You shouldn't think of a review as just promotion for your comic.
No. It's nice. Yeah. It's nice to get a pull cry out of it if you can, but
it's nice to get a good review. Of course it is. Yeah.
I mean, there are always squeaky bum moments. We've all had that. You know, we've all been chewing through our nails, thinking, "Oh God, they've just posted the review. Oh my God, I've got."
I don't think some people do now, man. I genuinely think some people live in this like dream world where they just think it's going to be lovely.
I've had bad reviews.
We have.
We had one fucking last year. That fucking put me on the ropes. That was really hard. That video review.
We've had
a couple.
And they're all wrong because we're amazing. No,
exactly. I just thought it was nice. It was it brings it home, doesn't it? The amount of passionate fans there were in this comic, in this company, for in this country for comics and stuff. And it's like, I wish we could go back to that, man. I really wish we had people who were going in comic shops, exciting about what's coming out. And mostly comics shops treat us with fucking disdain these days, aren't?
Yeah. Well, I think it comes from the top down. That.
Yeah.
There's a disdain for the readership, not understanding the readership, and just pandering to audiences that don't buy the fucking comics.
Yeah, I think you're right. To the internet, I mean, we see stuff all the time on social media, and it doesn't always represent the thoughts of the vast majority. You know, it represents the thoughts of people who like to go on social media and shout about stuff.
Twitter is not a fucking reflection of society in any way, shape, or form.
It's
the
not.
Opinions you see on there just do not hold up.
Yeah. The best example, and I'm not getting political, and it doesn't reflect my political opinions, what I'm about to say, but the big thing was everyone on Twitter seemed to be for the Labour Party, this, Corbyn, that, and they had the fucking worst
They got election the absolute drubbing.
Yeah. And I'd love to have seen them get in, but they didn't. And the bubble on Twitter was a mess, you know.
It fucking came to me with Brexit. Everyone on fucking Twitter was like, never, this is never going to happen.
Yeah.
And then here we are.
And I was convinced going to bed at the time of Brexit, there's no way we'll vote.
No way.
Not after everything I've seen. And yet again, no, there you go. What's happened there?
Same with the Trump as well.
Yeah, sadly,
Same with that. It's just. There we go.
So it's blast from the past. Good fun. Yeah, I recommend everyone pulls out the odd fanzine from the past and have a read of it. It's a real little time machine back to those days as well, Really good stuff.
Where can you get your hands on things like that?
eBay, man. That's where I've been buying them. There's the comic shop in Putney. I can't remember the name. Near the Half Moon pub. And they've got loads in there. That's a good place to go and get them. I bought some old Fantasy Advertiser and stuff in there. Yeah, but mostly eBay I get my stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, okay. It's up to me to finish off.
Here we go, babes.
Yep. And it's time to get serious for a bit. Well, actually, we were quite serious then.
That almost
went political there.
We've been quite serious through a lot of this show, with the occasional crew
joke.
Bum
jokes.
Before I mention the comic, how do I start this? Right, race and representation. Right, I've actually written some words down for this because I wanted to get this right. I mean, race has never been more important than comics. That is right. Now, let's be honest, it should always be important, full stop. So from creators such as Roy Thomas, who we talked about on last week's show.
We mentioned him today. We mentioned him 10 minutes ago. Yeah.
to countless creatives, professionals, comic book fans whose daily struggles that we're very aware on this show that as white men, we can't comprehend or understand those day-to-day struggles. And we're three white men hosting a weekly podcast about a hobby and craft that for the majority of the medium's existence has been predominantly about and for white men. And we're quite critical about it a lot of the time in certain aspects, and a lot of stuff hasn't translated well over the years. But I'm not going to stand on a soapbox here, because there's a lot of... We talk about stuff off air that there's a lot of far better people than us doing a lot of good work, charitable campaigns, and raising awareness of these issues. So go forth and do what you can to help in a serious, sensible way, and like be positive and affect change.
Yeah, man, we're just about the love of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And we're about... What we're about is discovering awesome comic books as well.
Yes.
And certainly the spirit of this show has always been about discovering new books, creators and stories. And I think it's been brilliant to see so many people actively seeking out and supporting work from black creators over these past few weeks. It's something that I myself took this task to heart a bit, and like, you know, focused a little more of like the eye of Sauron that was looking over the comic book field, you know, for books to pick up each week. And this week I picked up a book that's been on my periphery for a while, which is partly due to some awesome design and covers that are always on the short list for the best covers of the week, etc. But this book hit me on levels that I didn't think it would. And that book is Excellence from Image Comics and Skybound. Skybound put out some cracking books, didn't they?
Oh, I need to get that Destroyer book. I need to get that Chris Samnee book.
I just want to read an excerpt from the back pages of issue 2. This is from Carrie Randolph, who's an artist who... we were sharing bits of his artwork backwards and forwards on the WhatsApp today, because he did an amazing print for Heroes for Hire.
I forgot about that. I love that print.
Absolutely.
Man, he draws a mean Shang-Chi, doesn't he? Jesus.
So good. And I know he's got a legion of fans, but this is, you know, I'll talk about it in a minute. Issue 1... and 2 have letters from the writer, and in the second one there's a sort of letter in the back that is from Randolph himself. So I'm just going to quote this a bit verbatim, because I think this is quite... there's more to it. There's a lot more to it, and sometimes we talk about back matter in comics, but these were issues where the back matter was, you know, just as important as everything going forward as well, for a lot of different reasons, but, you know, it's just fascinating reading. And this is just an excerpt from issue 2. Being black is about understanding that what you do, it's not just about you. It's about what you represent. You have a responsibility to not just represent yourself, but your block, your borough, your community, your race. It's not right and it's not fair, but it is what it is. We all learn about this responsibility early on. They will always think that you are less than good enough. Less than. Good isn't good enough. You must be great. We didn't work this hard for you to get here, for you to throw it all away. You made it out. You better represent. Being black, the world is on your shoulders, and every day is shoulder day. I mean, that's a fucking line of heart. That hit me. Anyway, this is why people like fantasy so much. The world is difficult, and we need ways to cope. But a funny thing happens when you become a creator of fantasy. You do it long enough, you start to mature and realise that it's not enough to create fun escapism for people. At some point, you feel a need to create things that have something to say. It's not enough to give people what they want. You have to give back. You have to give them what they need. You need to represent. And a lot of this book, which is Excellence, carries those themes through. This is, you know, this is a book that there's a lot of themes going on like that, but it's also a fantasy book, and it's spectacular, absolutely spectacular. I got into this today, and I'm still sort of catching up on it. The synopsis is this: Spencer Dales was born into a world of magic. His father belongs to the Aegis, I think, or Aegis. Oh, I probably murdered that.
Yeah, Aegis, now I reckon.
Aegis.
Yeah, I think so. Isn't that a classical Greek thing, isn't it? Is it Aegis?
That makes total sense to me. A secret society of black magicians ordered by their unseen masters to better the lives of others, those with greater potential, but never themselves. Now it's time for Spencer to follow in his father's footsteps. but all he sees is a broken system in need of someone with the wand and the will to change it. But in this fight for a better future, who will stand beside him? Now, that's a straight up fantasy book right there. You know, like this. I mean, it's a modern fantasy. It's all set in a city. Now, where do I start? You see why I wanted to make loads of notes this week. This is a book that astonished me on many levels.
How many issues of this are there out so far?
Well, this has had... I'm late to the party on this. This came out last year. The first six issues have come out and there's a trade of it. And issue seven has just come out recently.
So, I'm always missing Image books.
Yeah.
I mean,
now's the perfect...
It's always one that surprises me. Yeah.
That's the thing about this. You know, it was kind of... You know when you have like the to-read pile or to-buy pile in your... You know, the wish list in the back of your mind whenever you see these books week on week. And that was always one that jumped out. So now it's like, you know, it just gave me the kick up the ass to check this out. I know it's got a completely... The creative team are sort of completely... They're all black. And I've got a shout out of the creators. Actually, Brandon Thomas, who's the creator and writer. Carrie Randolph is the creator and artist. Emilio Lopez is the colorist. Daron Bennett is the letterer. And you got Sean Makovich. I bet I got that wrong. Is the editor. And Ariel Basic is the associate editor. That was creative. I want to make sure I got that right because I had a feeling that I was going to skip over over that and do this whole review without mentioning anyone. Yeah, firstly, as you said, this is my first full-on experience with the artwork of Carrie Randolph. Apart from like these one-off bits that, like I say, we've been posting backwards and forwards going, have you seen this? It's amazing. He's an artist. I've seen some awesome pieces from over the years, but hadn't actually got a chance to read sequential book with his work. I think he's done some Spider-Man. He's done quite a bit of stuff, hasn't he, Tony? I think he's worked with Marvel a fair bit.
Carrie Randolph?
Yeah.
Yeah, he has, yeah. Yeah, you know, he's quite... He's got a real... I really like his style. He's got a sort of... there's a touch of the manga about it, but it's realistically, he knows how to structure, you know, the musculature and all that sort of thing. Yeah, he's really good with that
and
sort of thing.
Yeah, and certainly the people themselves sometimes, and certainly the main character of Excellence reminds me, it's almost like he had the character figure of, is it Michael B. Jordan, the actor? Yeah.
Yes.
He's got him, and it's like, clearly, but not in a Greg Land, I'm tracing him every time. This is someone who's just got that actor in his head, and he's just drawing that. You know, maybe he hasn't, but that's who this character looks like. So I hadn't got a chance to read a sequential book with his work, and I was missing out, clearly. Because as Tony says, dude fucking smashes it, man.
He does some great commissions. I see some commissions in a couple of groups I'm in being posted, and there's some good stuff on there.
And there's masterful set pieces, there's framing, emotional storytelling, of which this book has a lot of. And there's a hell of a lot of amazing action scenes. Amazing. I mean, it literally crackles with energy on every page. And you know, there's probably legions of fans out there that know Carrie's work. Brandon Thomas is also a creator that I haven't read any of his previous work, the writer. He wrote books such as Horizon. That's another Skybound book. Have you heard of that?
Okay. No, I haven't read it, no.
He's done a book called Noble as well. Voltron, he did a Voltron book.
Oh, okay. Amongst others.
I will be amending that because... this is comic book writing on a completely new level. The story's action packed and fantastical. Brandon also he's another podcaster out there. He's got a podcast called The Two Brandons. I've forgotten the. Forgive me, I've forgotten.
What's the name of the other guy on it?
Well, Brandon, but I'm not quite sure. Who knows? I'll put a link in the show notes.
All right.
Yeah, the story is action packed and fantastical. We talk about world building a lot on this show, and anyone who's tried to create an entire world, especially when it comes to like fantasy and magic orders, and like, you know, you can't go into it thinking I'm going to do the basics, because you have to have a world to it. There has to be a background, or you're losing from the moment you do the first panel, because someone's going to question something. I think you have to have some sort of basis of the history of these ancient, you know, orders and cabals and stuff. It's done so well in this book, though. And there's no heavy exposition. There's no smash-you-over-the-head information dumps. We're literally dropped into this world. Once again, like we said earlier, you know, being dropped into the world. We're dropped in the world via Spencer's viewpoint. And it literally just gives you all you need to know to go along for the ride. Both visually and emotionally, you know, that it's his voice going through it, but you're getting the sense you do pick up on the sense of the shades of grey going through it as well, because it's his viewpoint. You know, certain characters are seen a different way, but you can tell that maybe there's some regrets he has. There's different things going on that, you know, it's not an unreliable narrator because you're with him, but at the same time you can tell there's more to these people that he has
opinions on.
Yeah, this is an emotional book as well. There's huge things going on. Like I said, secret cabals of magic. Lord knows what else to come. You know, powers, dimensions, all kinds of things going on. But you strip all that away, and it's a book about family. That's what this book is about. And especially between the bonds between fathers and sons. That is the heartbeat of the story. That is the strongest thing going through it. And it delivers the biggest sort of emotional sort of pull at the heartstrings or gut punches come from those moments of two people who, for whatever reason, really struggle to connect. And the way this team mixes all that together with everything else on top's quite extraordinary. Because I went to it thinking this looks like a cool fantasy book, you know, glorious artwork and, you know, cool sort of ideas and like magic and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden it's about the people, which is what it's got to be. It's got to be, really, I think, because otherwise you're not invested, are you?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Shout out to the rest of the team. Emilio Lopez's colours are glorious on it. There's lots of effects and energy. There's different sort of... They give you almost a Jonathan Hickman-style graphic at the beginning telling you the rules of the magic, sort of this old order, and the levels of them. And each level of magic has different sort of shade. Like, I think there's a purple shade for one type of magic, and then the colours change depending on what sort of level you are at in this order. So all of that filters through as well, and it's beautifully done. And of course there's special effects and energy, not to mention the softer character moments, which he really makes the whole thing shine, I would say. Bennett's letters are top notch. There's a lot of dialogue and narration and effects that he does really well, and there's just no missteps whatsoever throughout the whole thing. You can tell this series is a labour of love for the team that are in it. They're in it to win it, and you know, this is astonishing. It might also have my favourite page of the year so far, which I'm going to live on air. I'm going to WhatsApp to
have a look.
Dan and Tony.
What's that you're sending us? Sorry, is it that picture of your balls again?
Well, that as well. Scroll past those, and you'll see what might be my favourite page of the year.
There's a few of them.
Small spoilers on this for this moment in the book, and I'll just give a bit of background to it. Now, Spencer's grandmother, who's quite a linchpin for the story as well, in it, she's unwell. She becomes unwell, and she isn't responsive for most of the time. But there's a moment where Spencer uses a stolen wand and a bit of sort of frowned upon magic to sort of have a conversation with her, like he always used to. Now, leading up to the page, you have a bit of story moments, a bit of dialogue with them, and just before this page, his grandmother says something to the effect of like, enough of all that nonsense, tell me about my TV shows. And then it leads to this, it's a wordless page, not speech balloonless, because there are speech balloons, and you can see the two of them have a long conversation, which as the wand burns down and the day draws to a close, you can see that the grandmother is slowly returning to her sort of like state where she can't talk as much. And it's a beautiful moment of there are speech balloons which actively tell you what they're saying without any words at all.
Yeah, they're conversing.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean. I thought, for example, you hadn't included the layer, but yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's, but, and like they have the wand on the left side of the page, so you can see as the, and the colours in the background as well as the day gets darker, finishing on a last panel, which kind of choked me up a bit. That's what's going on. It's certainly my favourite bit of storytelling I've seen all year.
That's really well done. Her speech bubbles over the four reduce in size to the point where the last one she's not saying anything.
Yeah.
And her head goes from being fully upright to sort of a slumped position. Yeah. She's kind of like just gone again.
It's just, you know, that one page, even if you didn't know everything going up to it, that does so much, that one page. I was just kind of like that. That blew me away anyway. And there's loads of other stuff around that as well. So, you know, buy this book just for that page alone, but you'll enjoy the rest of it. Like I say, I'm catching up now on the issues. I'm just about to start issue 4, so I haven't even finished the first arc yet. But it's joined my list of books that I'll be reading every time a new issue comes out.
I don't think I've even seen this in the shop. It's funny, isn't it?
What, on the shelves?
I don't think I have, no.
And it, I mean, that's a shame. If that's a
There's quite a lot of image stuff you don't... I think it must just go straight into people's pull boxes and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Shame,
I mean,
isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it is a shame. I mean, but as with Image, a new arc is about to start. Volume 1 is there. Whether it's digital or whether it's, you know, find it in bookstores or order it or whatever, go get Volume 1 because however you want
to... I'm going to have a look for that, yeah.
However you want to consume it, and, yeah, join me. Join me. Join me, and, yeah, because no matter how you discover it or whenever you get there, if you listen to this in, like, 2 years and you've never heard of this book, that would be a fucking crime. I know, as always, as soon as you hear a book, you look online... And people have been, you know, the people that have read this book have been raving about it for a long time. So, you know, I'm on board now. I'm on the train now. So, it, you know, I'm with you. And like I say, no matter how you get there, I can promise you this, no matter when all is said and done, this is brilliant comics. End of. That's all you need to know. It's just good comics. And that's what we need more of. Especially now when we need something cool to read. And sort of affect us, and you're like, you know, this book's got it all. So Excellence is joined my must read pile now, and yeah, very good. I hope I did my books justice this week.
Yes,
and we hope you enjoyed this whole show. I thoroughly enjoyed this week.
Yeah, I like it when you do this. Yeah. I enjoy this.
We hope you had fun. And maybe learn some things, even if that learning was, they have no idea what they're talking about.
No.
Yeah, which is every week, because we don't know what we're talking about, but we just love comics, so we don't care. We're going to do this every week. if there's anything you want us to know about, if you're launching a book, if there's any sort of events like this crazy thing we came up with, a drink and draw this week, if you're doing a similar sort of thing, or if you're getting more comics to kids as well in this time of need, just let us know about all of it and we'll shout out on the show. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We need another competition at some point in the future, don't we?
Yeah.
I've got a couple of prizes.
Oh, I bet you have.
Super Soldiers issue 1. I've got a spare copy.
Oh, dude. Did you like it that much? Do you want to share the love?
No, I don't know why. The eBay thing, I bought the first 7 issues and it came with 2 issue 1s. I thought, okay.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's your collector needs.
He'll be kicking himself realizing he's lost 2 issues of that.
Yeah. Silver embossed cover. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Cool. That'd be worth a bit in a few years' time.
Yeah. So now I have received quite a few of my Kickstarters and Indiegogos and all that sort of thing this week. So there's a few I need to get to. So if I didn't review this week, it's coming.
Yeah. There's a lot of comics out there. So.
Especially in our little world.
Yeah. I'll be reading some over the next few days. Anyway, yeah, so email us there. If you follow us on Twitter, or if you don't follow us, you should follow us at The Awesome Pod. I still need to sort out the password so these gents can get back on it.
I can still get into it.
Can you? I lost the keys to it. I did that thing, you know, when you log on and you save it
and you can't remember
what it was.
I uninstalled Twitter because I was just fucked off of it.
Yeah.
And I can't remember.
Yeah. I'll sort all that out. I'll sort the technical bits out. Anyway, follow us on there. We've been talking about Facebook a bit. But there is a genuine good place to go on Facebook. That's the group Awesome Comics Talk. Like I said, there's loads of great community banter from people all over the world. To just talking about the love of comics without any hard selling. It's brilliant.
We love it.
Yes.
And if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Thank you for listening to us wherever you found this show, whether it's the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review. Please. Please love us. Please. Go on, Tony, beg.
No, I don't beg for sex. That's a lie. That's a lie.
There's the quote.
Please, I'll be your friend.
Yeah.
And do not forget, Thursday is Vince's 40th birthday. Make sure you send him gifts.
Yeah.
You don't. Yeah. No, don't.
And well wishes.
Yeah.
I will be travelling down in my car to see him on Saturday to have a socially distanced cuddle.
Mm. Yeah. To be fair, that's like every cuddle we've ever had, even before the pandemic kicked off.
It's not. You hold me gently but firmly most times I see you.
It's true. Yeah. Sometimes he's inside me. So thank you. So,
if we give Tony a hug, he does kind of like grimace. I quite like that.
Yeah.
So, oh, God.
Yeah. 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 You were made for these times, Tony. If you listen to us on any other networks, such as Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Squirrels in My Pants.
I couldn't even do the silence. I couldn't do the silence. He's done me. He's completely done me.
Cough, Sim.
Anyway, where can... I've gone. It's been too long. Where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezo, yes, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z, never on anything, .bigcartel.com to buy my comics. Thank you very much.
Dan.
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic. And you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. There you go.
I thought that was going to be a melody then, Dan. You can find
start
me.
Again.
You can find
the other one is go to the Spark.
Oh,
on Kickstarter. Yes. Pledge the Spark on Kickstarter. We're all in it. Go do it.
Yeah, we're in it to win it. That's the second time I've used that phrase. God, yeah. I'm so unoriginal. And if you want more unoriginality, you can follow me on Twitter at Jess of Diablo.
You want some more bringing a passion this week, V? Bringing it. It's good, man. Like it. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. I feel a bit emotional. Anyway, but yeah, and my comic is on. I'm not really on Instagram at the moment with my own stuff because it'd just be pictures of whatever I've baked, my cats, or wherever I've gone for a walk. So, if you want to check out my comic, then go on Instagram and follow at Black the Comic, which is BLAK the Comic, which is now after a few days sort of grace period of not posting too much. We're back on schedule now, so yeah, it's all good. And there's plenty of crazy pages to come. So yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, so thank you for listening, folks.
Good stuff.
Go forth and enjoy your weeks. Stay safe wherever you are. We hope you're healthy, well, wherever you listen to this, whenever you listen to this, we hope you've enjoyed it. So, from Dan, Tony and myself, go forth, read loads of comics, discover loads of great creators, stay friends with us because we need them, and as always, what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Dan, you got to be quicker on the draw, man.
Yeah. Are we doing, is that what we're doing now?
Let's make it a thing. It's going to be quick draw, man.
I'm usually pretty
like
good at...
When did you become Ali G?
Pretty good at going off early, so
yeah, just touch it and it fires off.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm not sure if you can be good at going off early, but there you go.
Well,
as long as I enjoy it, that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Bye, everyone. Premature for who? See you later.